Jimmy Lai, which the Prime Minister has not secured. And I mean, I don't know how hard he tried, and arguably we never will, but it does seem to be something, given that Jimmy is a British citizen, that Keir Starmer could have prioritised a little higher before celebrating the fruits of his trip to Beijing. Why do we know so little about such an enormous place?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, ministers are playing down Donald Trump's claim that it's dangerous for the UK to do business with China. Sir Keir Starmer's on the final day of his visit to the country, pushing for stronger economic ties. This understood Downing Street made Washington aware of the trip and its objectives in advance. The Shadow Home Office Minister Alicia Kearns has told LBC News Mr Trump is right to speak out.
Over the last 18 months, we have seen the Chinese Communist Party support Putin and its renewed illegal invasion of Ukraine. We've seen them imprison and torture Jimmy Lai, a British national. They've conducted cyber attacks against our government and businesses. Yet rather than see a single repercussion for those activities, instead, Keir Starmer has gone to China and he's come back having not delivered any messages of deterrence.
A council says it found no evidence of higher rates of childhood cancer in a town in Northamptonshire. Families in Corby have been concerned about a potential link with historic waste dumping in the area. LBC's reporter Shivani Sharma has seen a report from the reform-led Northamptonshire Council.
The council has said its findings show there's no evidence that there are higher childhood cancer rates in Corby than in Northamptonshire or the East Midlands, and that these findings have been independently reviewed by health experts. The council has said this should provide reassurance, and it's thanked the families who have raised concerns.
Two army officers will face a court-martial over their conduct in the case of soldier Jaisley Beck. The 19-year-old was sexually assaulted, then took her own life at her barracks in Wiltshire in 2021. Reform UK has withdrawn its support for a council candidate accused of posting racist and anti-Semitic comments on social media. Mike Manning is standing in an upcoming by-election. He's apologised and says if he could withdraw his name from the ballot, he would. The Conservatives are calling for a bus driver to get his job back after he was sacked for chasing down a robber. Mark Heahere knocked the man out after a passenger's necklace was stolen in London in 2024. Police found that he used proportionate force, but the bus firm Metroline decided that he'd failed to protect customers. And millions of low-income families will continue to receive the Warm Home discount for the rest of the decade. The government's agreed to extend the £150 off energy bills every winter until 2031. In this city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 15 at 10,186. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most with patchy rain and hill snow in the north. Heavy rain and strong winds for the south and west, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
That there is a great night's sleep. And when Susan wakes up, she's going to get to enjoy a delicious unlimited breakfast. Or, if that super comfy bed is just too hard to leave, Susan can enjoy a midday checkout. Get better sleep for your money. Book now at Premier Inn. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It's actually extraordinary, isn't it, that he now infects, is the word I want. He infects absolutely everything. Feels like a different age, a different epoch, when people who weren't very well informed or very bright or possibly both would use Trump derangement syndrome as an insult or a pejorative because they hadn't grasped how completely depraved, morally bankrupt, politically corrupt he was. But even when the British Prime Minister visits China on a trip that is in the national interest in one way and morally repugnant in another, even when the British Prime Minister visits China, such is the nature of news that we perhaps inevitably end up leading the report of the story with a reference to what Donald Trump has said about it. You know, in those science fiction films, when humans are turned into mutants and the clever scientists finally get the DNA on the computer screen or something like that, and it's as if a sort of Raspberry Ripple effect starts running through our genetic makeup that explains the mutation, whether it's sort of emanated from a meteorite that landed in the middle of a desert after jetting in from outer space, whatever it is that is turning human beings mad. What is it in Day of the Triffids? Is it something in the sky? Don't at me. Well, you can at me, actually, but don't ring me. Do you know what I mean? And you finally get it up on the computer screen, and it's infecting every part of us. I watched the latest 28 Days Later film the other day. My God, that is such a good... That is such an extraordinary film. It really is. But it's about... No spoilers, I don't think. It's about zombies, and it's about the way in which... Well, it's not about that, but all zombie films essentially have a central premise by which we become, technical term coming up, zombified. And it involves infection, infiltration of every corner of our being. And Donald Trump is doing that now. Donald Trump is the infection. And he is now reaching into, because of the power and the nature of his office as President of the United States, and because of the unique depravity of his character, he is now reaching into every aspect of our existence. It's absolutely insane. I said to you yesterday, and I stand by it today, I wasn't sure I would. I thought I might be enjoying a sort of first flush syndrome. It's incredibly liberating to let go of hope. It's incredibly liberating to stop thinking he'll come good in the end, or that normal circumstances will be resumed, or that this is the mayor. I think there's an actual piece in the Washington Post, more or less under the headline of America just doesn't do fascism. Please stop using that word. And you're like, you're so nearly there. You're so nearly there. We all thought America didn't do fascism, but it does, and it is. Hideous comments now about the murdered nurse, Alex Pretty, that Donald Trump has shared on social media. We may get onto that in a moment. They're not zombies. Paul is on form already this morning. They're not zombies, James. They are infected. Zombies have to be dead first. Did you know that, Keith? Did anybody else? Is Paul right, even? I mean, is Paul providing us with fake news? I don't know. But anyway, they are infected. You're absolutely right. And it is every corner of the body politic, really, on both sides of the Atlantic and beyond, has now been infected by him. So he slags off Keir Starmer for visiting China, and he is visiting China himself in April. You can't make this stuff up. He has called Alex Pretty an insurrectionist, a possible insurrectionist, as if that were a bad thing, which it can't be, because actual insurrectionists got pardoned and praised by Donald Trump within 10 minutes of him getting back into the White House. And it speaks, perhaps, it's not often I put Donald Trump and our esteemed colleague Henry Riley in the same space, but it perhaps speaks also, what I'm about to ask you, to Henry's experiences in Chinatown, in this country, in this city indeed, in London a moment ago, that you heard on the end of Nick's show, where you wonder why you don't have a stronger opinion about things, and you realise that it's because you don't know enough. So, I mean, how else are you going to report Keir Starmer's visit to China except by saying Donald Trump has slagged it off? Newspapers are a little better, but they, of course, went to the presses before Donald Trump stuck his oar in. What would happen if we tried not to talk about him except when he does think, no, you can't do that because he does what he what he said he was going to do. All of the people who said, don't worry about what he says, focus on what he does, have gone incredibly quiet. Which reminds me, I think it's Dick Littlejohn Day again today, isn't it, in the Daily Mail? We'll have to wait and see what he's had to say about his absolute political hero, who he wishes was running this country, now that he is essentially libelling murdered nurses and encouraging goon squads and snatch squads on the streets of America. I can't wait to see what the top columnist in Britain's top newspaper has got to say about his former political hero. The sackcloth and ashes must have been on order. Don't let me forget that, actually. I'll have a look later, because that's where I want to start today. It is nearly 10 minutes past ten, and I don't know enough about China to have a strong opinion about Keir Starmer's visit. I have mentioned to you a few times that Robin Cook was the last British politician I can remember using the words ethical and foreign policy in the same sentence. A foreign secretary who resigned over foreign policy. I don't know if we're ever going to return to those days. It may have been an unachievable dream even then, but at least people still dreamt it. Pragmatism is a very dangerous word, isn't it? It excuses a multitude of sins. He's very pragmatic, which often means, well, he's dancing with the devil because he thinks that he has to. Or, you know, he is behaving in a way that is morally questionable, but intellectually justifiable. If we didn't trade with bad people, who would we be left to trade with at all? A question that assumes a peculiar resonance when you remember that we, as a country, voted to remove ourselves from the largest trading bloc on the planet, the largest trading bloc in the history of humanity. We voted to remove ourselves from that, and the people that encouraged us to do so are in some cases, I was looking at the front page of the Daily Mail, are in some cases attacking Keir Starmer for trying to build trading ties with all that's left. China, I think, in the top five countries when it comes to UK trade already, and it usually goes up a notch if you start seeing European Union countries as individual states, which you probably shouldn't do, as opposed to a single trading bloc. So I'm going to go out on a bit of a limb this morning. It's not what you might call a traditional phone-in, but I am fully conscious of the fact that I can't do this every day. If I came on air every day and said, I don't know enough about this subject to have a strong opinion, how long would it be before they yanked me off air? And it would make a complete mockery of me getting paid to do my job. What is it that you what is it that you're there for? Well, I go on air and I admit that I'm stupid, and everybody rings in to tell me stuff I didn't know before. I like that. They're sometimes my favourite phone-ins, but I can't do it on every subject, and I'm not sure I've ever done it on a subject quite as big as this. Things I know about China. I mean, it is a regime where a radio programme like this would reach Chinese ears with absolute incomprehension. He's everyone can listen to him, and he just slagged off the leader. Yeah. Everyone can listen to him, and he routinely takes the mickey out of politicians from all parties. Well, there's only one party, of course, in China, but he takes it. Well, yes, he does. And he hasn't been disappeared. He hasn't been locked up. He hasn't. Wow. That first point there is almost inconceivable. And I think when I was young and naive, sorry, when I was younger and naiver, I probably might have started thumping my undergraduate folders and shouting about how we should never do business with a regime like that. And then you remember Tiananmen Square, and you sort of remember thinking, yeah, maybe we should never be doing business with a country like that. And I remember the motorcade making its way up the M4 when the King of Saudi Arabia came to visit. Countries we do business with where you still are not allowed to be gay. Ethical foreign policy. What else do I know about China? I know that they think centuries ahead. Frank knows this too. He's in Darwin in Lancashire and says, my old history teacher always said, beware of the Chinese. They plan years and years into the future. I was 13 years old at the time, James, and I'm now in my mid-70s. And when you look at the roads and bridges policies in the on the African continent, you will see that China has got its a tentacle sounds like a negative, but Chinese interests now extend not only right across the continent, but also across the centuries. Because Frank's old teacher was right. They are thinking generations ahead. They are not thinking in terms... It's almost the polar opposite of electoral cycle-dominated politics. The fact that I'm even talking about things in the UK that can be reversed tomorrow would also, I think, reach Chinese ears as close to anathema. They did what? They voted to come out of the biggest trading bloc in the world. Are they all mad? Well, not all, but 52%. But don't worry, because when normality is resumed and when good sense returns, we can actually all vote to go back in again. And we probably won't even need to vote, because by the time it happens, it'll be so obvious that it has to, that all the talk of referendums and the like will be moot. That, sadly, that day is still a long way off, as you can tell by just looking at the opinion polls. So, things I know about China. You can't say anything against the government if you live there. The plan, that, for want of a better word, is immense and epochal. It's imperial in concept. We talk about the Roman Empire. We talk about, the British Empire. And we think about them flaring brightly but briefly. Chinese dominance of the globe is... A work in progress. I think I read, did I read this week, that African countries are now paying more back to China in loan repayments than they are receiving in loans. I don't know what the significance of that is, but it struck me at the time as fairly important. So African countries are mortgaged to the hilt, if you like, and they're paying more back to Chinese lenders, which are going to be the Chinese government, ultimately, than they are now receiving. And, it doesn't strike me as a completed job, the regeneration of the African continent. So I don't know enough to have a strong... I certainly don't know enough to know whether or not Keir Starmer should or should not have gone to China. I'm very sad that he hasn't secured the release of Jimmy Lai. But given his background in human rights and law, I presume I will give him the benefit of the doubt and presume that he tried. And when there comes a point when you realise it's not going to happen, do you pack everything up and go home? Or do you, wait for it, do you employ altogether now pragmatism? Do you employ pragmatism rather than a sort of moral absolutism? But you employ... I wish that we had secured Jimmy's release, but we couldn't. And there's no way I could let that failure or that refusal on the part of Xi Jinping stymie the progress that we have made in various areas. If Xi Jinping visits this country, as was mooted yesterday, I think Jimmy Lai's case, please God he's still alive, would become even more acute. But in the moment that we're currently discussing, we are cozying up to China. And I should be asking you why we should or shouldn't. But I can't really do that without admitting to you that I don't know enough. I sense, well, I've done it, haven't I? I've told you what's going on without actually intending to. What is the relationship between pragmatism and principle? It is obviously a country built on principles that we are repulsed by. But pragmatism demands that we do business with people we don't like. Now, how many of us still use Amazon, despite the fact that Jeff Bezos is rapidly turning into a sort of medieval noble? I don't know enough to have an opinion that I am confident of. That's the point, I think. That's the problem. And I'm not going to end up with an opinion that I would furiously defend, like my conviction that Donald Trump is depraved or that Brexit was a stupid thing to do or that Boris Johnson should never have been allowed anywhere near the reins of power. Ditto Liz Truss, of course. Ditto Nigel Farage. I'm not going to end up with an opinion that is as clear and as evidence-based as those, but I'd like to have a slightly better opinion than I have now. I really would. But I can't until you help me out a bit. So, why? Two questions. Really simple in essence, but presumably quite complicated in solution. Why do we know so little about China? 0345 60 60973. Off the top of my head, look at the difference between Trump and Xi Jinping. Trump's every... I mean, he could almost break wind and lead the 10 o'clock news on the BBC. Xi Jinping, I don't want to use the word inscrutable because it's borderline racial stereotype, isn't it? But I know nothing about any of these people. I know more about Donald Trump than I would want to know in a million lifetimes. But why do we know so little about China? It can't be a coincidence. So how does that closure of communication work? If you think you're qualified to answer the question, why would nobody talk to Henry when he was wandering around Chinatown with his microphone? Is it a question of character or is it a question of fear? I honestly don't know. But where all of these questions lead is to should we be doing business? Should we be cozying up to this regime? And that is the ultimate battle between pragmatism and principle. If you hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 60 60 973. Why do we know so little about China? And should we be cozying up to this regime? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. I don't say this every day, but sometimes we jump off cliffs on this program in the hope that someone will provide a parachute before we reach critical mass. And that has involved over the years, and if you're new to the program, you may not have witnessed this, but over the years it has involved us somehow tempting out of the woodwork people who can't quite believe that they've phoned into a radio station, or people who are so supremely qualified to contribute to a conversation that they actually get phoned up and invited onto other programs and other stations and the BBC. We tend not to book guests on this show, just for reasons, but I do remind you at this point, if you're listening to this and thinking, oh, if only I was the kind of person that rang radio shows, I'd really be able to help this guy out, then be that person. Give us a ring, because knowledge and expertise are things that we like to celebrate. And on this issue, on this subject, I have none. 0345 60 60 973.
LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
You stepped up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £33 on this week's big shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands, and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Process check 26th of the first 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right. So my GP referred me to the CDC, had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours I had my results, and that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 23 minutes after 10, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And I'm not for a moment naive enough to believe that all of the countries that we do business with, and I would say cozy up to, because Keir Starmer was clearly in placatory mood, not least when he aired the possibility of an official visit to the UK by the Chinese Premier. something which causes a lot of anger among critics of Beijing. But I want to know more about that criticism, more about that relationship between principle and pragmatism, and I suppose, in essence, more about China. How can we know so little about something somewhere so enormous, not just geographically, of course, but in terms of impact and influence on the globe? It's odd, right? And I'll use Donald Trump as a comparison again. Imagine knowing as much about China as we know, or about Xi Jinping, about the Chinese administration as we know about the US one. Jamie's in Newcastle. Jamie, what would you like to say?
Yeah, I'll try and keep this short.
I never do. Why would you?
I've got facets of my point and facets of my argument.
Go on, then.
So, first, I think one of the challenges that we have, and I've just double-checked this, one of the challenges that we have, which is something that you will agree with, is that we were put in a position when we decided to leave the EU. And the decisions that we have to make is, how do we broker our own deals and we get the best for our country? Now, China is the EU's largest partnership, as is the EU back to China. Now, one of the challenges that I think everyone's going to look at, they're going to talk about, obviously, say, they're secretive, they're this, they're that, the other. That's their choice. You know, I'm not naive enough to suggest to think that they don't do it completely different the other way around. However, at this moment in time, our closest ally is behaving, in my view, in the most hostile way towards trade.
This is making me sick. You're right, and I can't argue with you, but it makes me sick that we can't talk about anything anymore without deploying the lens of Donald Trump's depravity. It has infected every single part of our politics. We're talking about China and wondering about the moral justification of warming up relations, and you are reminding us that the country with which we historically have the warmest of relations is currently governed by a madman.
I would call them hostile.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say zero. I'd say his behaviour towards anyone who disagrees with him is a hostile, and it's regarding trade. Now, we made an agreement that we would leave the EU in 2016. All right, that was the agreement. On the back of that agreement, we were told, economically, we have to stand on our own 2 feet. So why would it be economically not viable to approach one of the, if not the largest economy in the world, to see what it is we can gain from them? You know, you may find that that opens up a little bit less secrecy. I'm not saying it will, because, you know, it never has in the past. but we are in this position where all of these Brexiteers, we can stand on our own 2 feet. And when we sit there and go, we are going to go to the biggest, if we didn't use the word China, and we went, we are going to one of the biggest economic machines in the world to help our economy, not a single person would have an economic or a moral justification to say no.
Well, they would. They would, because there has to be a threshold beyond which we would not pass. You know, there are throughout history countries that we will not trade with because their regime is so hideous, and sanctions exist for a reason. And boycotts exist for a reason.
We wouldn't, that morally you sit and go, we're not too comfortable what they do, but there's an economic benefit.
Yeah.
Well, we're in this position because we made a decision. We made a decision as a nation, and part of that decision is, whether we like it or whether we don't like it, we have to look at every opportunity to improve our economy. And if China is a viable option, then what did they expect to happen? To go to little piddly countries and...
So do you think that...
Oh, this is a win?
Yeah, well, we know that they do think that, because that was when Kemi Badenoch was trumpeting trade deals that were neither trade deals nor with countries. She was trumpeting back-of-the-envelope greetings from US states.
Yeah.
But are you saying, and I think you are you saying that absent Brexit, Keir Starmer would not be in this position?
Not exactly, because I've just checked. In 2019, the EU signed a big trade deal as the biggest biggest trade agreement that they have is with China. We would have that trade agreement.
It's not an FTA, though, is it? But it is a trade agreement of sorts. Mm-hmm. So we'd be in a stronger position.
You know yourself. You know, we were the turkeys that voted for Christmas.
Yeah.
You know? And on the back of that, there's the, well, what are we meant to do?
Don't think it's been signed. I just Googled, which obviously is something I have the time and space to do, and you don't necessarily. But 2013, the comprehensive agreement on investment was agreed but not signed. I don't know that there is a maybe there is. I'll double check. But, of course, the one with India, because we're not following these things very closely, the one with India. No, there is an EU-China agreement. Forgive me. December 2020, yeah, the EU and China concluded in principle the negotiations, sorry, no, I'm right. It hasn't been signed yet, but it's edging ever closer. And the India one got over the line this week, so it happens.
They're talking about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
they're looking at it. So the whole EU is, you know, I feel at this moment in time, and it pains me to say it, but right now we have no choice at this moment in time but to look elsewhere because of the hostility towards any nation that stands up and says, I'm sorry, but that's not acceptable under law. We can't accept it. We've got our red lines, and we're being pushed past those red lines by a supposed friend. That doesn't work for me.
No, it'd be a bit rich of me to say to somebody that I wish you could somehow provide an analysis of this situation without bringing Brexit and Donald Trump into it. That would be the apotheosis of a pot calling a kettle black, wouldn't it? And I did, in my defence, begin the programme by explaining the horror show that we're living through with Trump infecting every corner of discourse and policy now in this country, or at least politics in this country. But I think Jamie's right. Why do we know so little about China, Jamie? I know that isn't the question you've chosen to answer, but do you want to have a crack at it?
I think like a lot of places, it's like, you know, for me, you know, do I want a lot of countries to know about our secrets and stuff like that?
Well, not even secrets. I mean, I don't know anything about China.
Yeah, I know very little other than it is on mine and my wife's bucket list.
Is
and that's the ancient historical artifacts and that's the sort of stuff that we like. I've had some people who've been to China and they've had a brilliant time. And I've been to Cuba, and the myths surrounding Cuba in terms of people's opinions, I've been to Cuba and I've never come across a more proud group of people in my entire existence.
There is this sort of post-imperial legacy, or U.S. imperial legacy. It's but we're not talking about some country that we couldn't find on a map. Apart from Donald Trump, I think everybody would be able to find China on a map. He probably thinks it's Greenland. But we're not talking about some you know, like a tiny African nation or some recently established. So it's extraordinary how little we know. I think it is, anyway. Maybe other people don't, but I think it's pretty extraordinary that we know so little about China. So that is the second question on the board. Why do we know so little? And why shouldn't, or indeed should, Keir Starmer be doing what he's doing and securing several agreements, more details on which I'll share with you after the headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Ministers are playing down Donald Trump's claim that it's dangerous for the UK to do business with China. So Keir Starmer's on the final day of his visit to the country, pushing for stronger economic ties. The council says it's found no evidence of higher rates of childhood cancer in a town in Northamptonshire. Families in Corby have been concerned about a potential link with historic waste dumping in the area. And two army officers will face a court-martial over their conduct in the case of soldier Jaisley Beck. The 19-year-old was sexually assaulted and then took her own life at her barracks in Wiltshire in 2021. LBC weather cloudy for most, with patchy rain and hill snow in the north, heavy rain and strong winds for the south and west, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you, that's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Come on. Listen to me.
and helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done, you should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
What's the secret to feeling young? Cryo chambers? Vampire facials? Forest bathing? Really? The real secret to feeling young can be found in the new Seat Ibiza and new Arona. Both have smart new looks and stylish new interiors. Plus, new alloy wheels and a 6-speaker sound system. Seat, rolling young.
That there is a great night's sleep. And when Susan wakes up, she's going to get to enjoy a delicious unlimited breakfast. Or, if that super comfy bed is just too hard to leave, Susan can enjoy a midday checkout. Get better sleep for your money. Book now at Premier Inn. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
If you want all the best stories to tell, Best at Travel will provide the inspiration. For 40 years, our UK-based travel experts have been creating tailor-made luxury holidays. We're real people, passionate about making luxury travel personal, helping create your perfect trip. Secure your 2026 holiday today in the Best at Travel New Year sale. You can speak to one of our experts or book online at bestattravel.co.uk. Rated excellent on Trustpilot. Atoll protected.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
I'm not going mad. There is something in this, and Jamie in Newcastle picked up on it as well. Yu Su is the principal economist at the Economist Intelligence Unit. Listen to this. Reflecting on the fact that the Canadian and the British leaders have gone to Beijing for the first time in at least 8 years. Ireland's Prime Minister was there at the beginning of this month, the first in 14 years. We know that there's even a South American leader on his way there. The Uruguayan president will be on his way there, I think next week. You would file all of this under the headline that countries that shunned China during its trade dispute with the US are now sending their leaders to Beijing for meetings with the Chinese president. But listen to this from the China expert, the principal economist, actually, at the Economist Intelligence Unit. These visits reflect managed selective resets under rising US policy uncertainty rather than a strategic pivot to China. So in a way, frustrating though it may be that everything is infected by Donald Trump, it is also the actual reality that we're dealing with. So you can park your frustration, or at least your frustration can be soothed by knowledge that this is correct. Keeping communications channels open with Beijing is increasingly seen as preferable to disagreement. Adding, particularly as the gains from selective resets with China become more visible and US policy has grown less predictable. So Jamie's exactly right. She doesn't bring, Yu Su doesn't bring Brexit into it. Well, not in the opening paragraphs of the article that I've read, but the instability, if you prefer that word to depravity, the instability of Donald Trump is pushing world leaders towards China. Even as he tells Keir Starmer that he shouldn't be going to China. The numbers with regard to US-UK trade, you're talking about billions upon billions of dollars. But why do we know so little? John's in Harrogate. John, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hello. So basically, I was in China for 5 years in a city called Shuzhou in northern Jiangsu province. And it's a very working city. You know, there was about 30 foreigners out of about 10 million Chinese people. So, you know, it was a question of if you didn't speak the language or learn it quickly, because I didn't know anything when I went over there, you didn't eat unless you went to McDonald's and pointed at a board. And the thing about China is it's been sort of closed off for so long, you know, until sort of the 90s when they started to open up their economy and open up to tourists and things like that, that it's always been that place that was over the horizon, certainly to us Brits. It was far away.
Oh, well, that's a brilliant first brick in the wall of my Great Wall of China. First brick in the wall of my understanding. Of course, and you're right, and I should have remembered that, is that it you are talking about essentially a new country, something that is emerging from years of self-imposed isolation.
Absolutely. You know, my uncle was, he worked for BP. And so he went there in the early 90s as they were opening up their economy to foreign investment. And, you know, he used to tell stories as I was a kid of this amazing place. And so when I got older, I was in a job I wasn't very happy with, an opportunity for me to go over and work there. Because I thought, I'll never get over there otherwise. And it absolutely opened my world, created confidence and things like that. And the people that I met were lovely. They were so welcoming, so nice. But there is a kind of an undercurrent of a fearful respect in the nation because, you know, everyone refers to Xi Jinping as Xi Dada. You know, he is Xi father.
Right.
You know, but on the equal side, here's a man who, within 2 weeks of Winnie the Pooh being a sticker on all of our phones, disappearing because he looked a bit like Winnie the Pooh. That absolute control. And I
just for older listeners, this isn't a sticker that comes free with a packet of Weetabix and you put it on your pencil case on your way to school. This is an online image. Yes. And that, I mean, I'm not aware of this story. It was somehow removed from circulation in China because critics or comics, wags, yes, have pointed out the physical resemblance between Xi Jinping and Winnie the Pooh.
Absolutely.
Which now that you come to mention QQ. It is there.
Yeah, QQ or Weixin, they disappeared just because people were making jokes about Xi Jinping because they wouldn't say, oh, Xi Jinping this, Xi Jinping that. They would just use the sticker.
Oh,
and it was a bit of sort of a silent rebellion amongst just youths and things like that.
Yeah.
You know? And I was one of them. You know, I would get in on a joke because who wouldn't? You know, we come from a culture where we can take the mick out of our leaders. But then at the same time, in my second year there, I was working at a university. It was an amazing job, loved the people. And I had a student. I was checking my call sheet that day to go, who are the students in this class? And I looked, there was one girl, and she had four characters in her name.
Right.
And most Chinese people have three characters in their name. And I just said, oh, this is unusual. And just said, who's this?
Yeah.
And I said, and she stood up. She goes, oh, hi, my English name is Tina. And I was like, oh, hi, Tina. Well, how come your name's different, just out of curiosity?
Yeah.
And she said, oh, I'm an Uyghur. I'm from a different part of China. We have different sort of cultural beliefs. And I was like, oh, what's this? Never heard of them before.
Yeah.
And then about a year after I come back, so I left in 2018, just shortly after my father passed away, and I moved back to the UK, and I started to hear on the news the stories about what was going on with that population.
Yeah.
And to this day, I do not know what happened to her or her family. I've no idea if they were put in a camp or anything, one of these re-education centres. I do not know. And I have no way of ever contacting it to find out. No sort of passive communication back to those students to find it.
You're describing a weird, almost parallel universe, aren't you, which you have in all totalitarian regimes. You can have a form of contentment among a population, but it is fringed and parenthesized by the extremes. I mean, by the fact that if you had, I mean, anybody in your class had started publicly comparing the leader to Winnie the Pooh, or worse, saying about him some of the things I routinely say every single day about politicians in this country, I'd disappear.
Yes. Yeah. If you wrote, you know, who broke Britain over there,
how they
we
broke
wouldn't
China.
Be listening to you on the radio.
Sounds like a Tapao song, doesn't it? But I mean, it just simply wouldn't happen. See, that's inconceivable, isn't it? And that's again back to Donald Trump, because you can see how it happens, how it gets imposed, which isn't what happened in China. It kind of evolved organic. No, it didn't, did it, with Mao Zedong? But you can see how it happens. They're closing down dissent, closing down journalists, until if you grew up in China now, you could be forgiven for thinking that this was all entirely normal.
Yeah. And the thing is that, you know, this is what I mean by there's a sort of a contentment behind the fear.
Yeah.
Is that people in China are happy. Food is cheap. Fuel is cheap. Even healthcare, whilst you have to pay for it, is relatively cheap. And it's one of those things where everyone has a job. You know, my mother came to visit me one day, and we were about to go around this mountain where they were just building a new road. And literally, as we cycled past, they opened up the road. And we were like, oh, let's go down this new road.
Mm.
It's nice. It's brand new tarmac. We're on bicycles.
Mm.
And there was a group about, there's a truck pulled up, and about 40 old women, all of them easily over 60 years old. Sorry if you don't consider yourself old at that age. and all of a sudden, all these women get out, and they started planting flowers in the flower beds beside this road. And within an hour, we came back, and these about 40 women had done easily about half a kilometre. worth of flower bed. And then they were back on the truck and gone. And I was like, if this was at home, how long would that take? Or they'd use a machine or something to clean the roads. Whereas, again, dirty street, 10 old men would come out with brooms. They'd be sweeping it. And they would be government employees. And one person with a machine in this country would not be as quick. But again, they're hiring 10, 20, 30 people to do that. So everyone's got a purpose. Whereas that... not everyone here has a purpose, because there is a lot of unemployment, things like that.
So you are unshocked by the idea of somebody living under what we would typify as a totalitarian regime being, in many ways, and according to many definitions, very happy.
Yes. I felt more safe and secure in China than I do in the UK. And I live in Harrogate, North Yorkshire, which is a lovely place.
It is indeed.
But I still felt weirdly safer and more secure there. But yet at the same time, I was in Beijing one day. I was walking along the street, and you will see guys on the corner with submachine guns. They're just like police. And then all of a sudden, they pull a barrier across part of the pavement, and you and the other maybe 60, 70 people in that section of pavement are suddenly funneled off to the side and put through, your bags are put through a scanner to make sure that, you know, you haven't got a bomb or anything like that. But then they looked at me as the one white guy in this crowd, and they just went, no, you don't have to, you just go through.
Really?
They're checking their own people, because they're more of the threat than me, just a pasty-faced white guy in Beijing.
Mm. And that, I mean, that's absolutely fascinating, isn't it? And that sense of safety, in terms of most normal people, do not spend their lives railing at the regime. I mean, in any country. But if you're not remotely, I talked about this in the context of Syria as well. So I remember talking to Syrian refugees about the comfortable middle class existence that many Syrians led. And of course, if you're relying on reportage British journalism, or if you're only really noticing countries when they're in meltdown or turmoil, you completely forget. It'd be relevant to Iran today, in that there will be people living in circumstances that our books teach us are unbearable and unconscionable, who are perfectly happy with the way things are going. I don't want to slag off the government, and I'm less likely to get mugged. I bet phone theft in China is a tiny fraction of what it is in the UK, that matters more to me, someone could reasonably say, than the fact that they're sterilising Uyghurs.
Yeah.
And sticking them in concentration camps.
It's always like it won't.
And also, I probably don't even know about that if I'm living in China, because where am I going to find out?
Exactly.
Oh,
there was a student of mine, you know, he said, he did a presentation that day, and his presentation was on lack of crime and high safety in China. And he said, there is no terrorism in China. And I was like 2 weeks before on BBC News, because I was using a VPN to read this article that very morning. There'd been a stabbing in China that was a act of terrorism against the government.
Yeah.
But he didn't know, because their news was like, no, nothing happened today.
And John, thank you so much. I'm so glad you were listening today. And again, I like to bring bloody Trump back into things. I remember, not John McCain, it was the guy who persona non grata now, wrote a book. He was very high up in Trump's first administration, and he rejected the definition of fascism on the grounds of Trump being too venal and small-minded. He just looks at Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin and thinks, why can't I behave like that? So the idea of a fascist ideology was somehow too grand a concept to apply to Donald Trump. It was, I'll remember his name during the break unless you text it to me now. It wasn't national security. Come on. I quoted it to you earlier this week, and that was it. Tracy's cross. And John did apologise, Tracy, but Tracy would like me to stress that 60 is not old. It's 10:47.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
It would have been an absolute farce to pay WASPI women some £10.3 billion in compensation. No one lost any money. The changes were announced 30-plus years ago with advertising campaigns and coverage. There were more letters set out in 2011. And I'm sorry to say, it's up to individuals to check their own financial arrangements.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit.
it could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers, your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern. Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. Right now, get 3 months free when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 19th of February. Pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
It's not easy being a clamp, stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Oh, it's all kicking off now. Marilyn Sandbach has been in touch. She's crossed with Tracy. He says, I'm nearly 60, James, and it is old. Oh, John in Harrogate there, giving us a quick insight into the real politics of China and accidentally starting an age war. I continue my quest to find out more. And it was John Bolton, as many of you remembered, stroke realised, who said not long ago, Trump's first term national security advisor, he listens to Putin, he listens to Xi, he listens to how they talk about governing unburdened by uncooperative legislatures, unconcerned with what the judiciary may do, and he thinks to himself, why can't I do that? And Bolton added back in the day, whether he's changed his view now after the snatch squads and state-sanctioned murders that we're seeing on US streets, this doesn't amount to being a fascist in my view or having a theory of how you want to govern. It's just, why can't I have the same fun they have? I suppose two things can be true at the same time. Donald Trump's idea of fun could actually equate with most experts' idea of fascism, but there it is. Tim's in Glasgow. Tim, what would you like to say?
So, good morning, James. Right, I'm 55, by the way, okay?
Very young, very young. Spring chicken, yeah? Mate. Okay. Yeah, carry on.
Okay, so, look, I'm calling as someone from Southeast Asian heritage. Parents were from Laos. There's a lot of influence from China, okay? I visited China. And anyway, so the reason for my call is to talk about the, you know, reluctance to speak about or criticize the government in China by Chinese people, let's say, right?
Yes.
So I think, you know, my memory is of Tiananmen Square, and I watched it live on the news, etc. Now, being a cautious person, I feel, and this may be the feelings of people in China, that, you know, they don't want to end up being taken away to prison or whatever for saying anything bad about their country, and their government.
The weird thing is, and the thing that we forget, is that a massive number of people wouldn't particularly want to. And that's where the dichotomy kicks in, because we can sit here with our luxurious Western sensibilities and be repulsed by by some of the actions of this regime, most obviously, and I am, for the avoidance of doubt, repulsed by the repression of free speech on this scale. But what if I didn't want to say anything that upsets the regime? I just wanted to feel safe on the streets at night and have a nice life. It's weird, right?
That may be the case. I mean, there's probably some kind of, let's say, indoctrination by, let's say, Confucius beliefs. You know, that thing where you need to be obedient, listen to your parents.
Yeah.
Not do anything. I've had personal experience of that in my family, and it took a lot of rebellion to remove myself from that situation. Now, some people may not feel
want to
that.
Rebel.
Well, you know, not.
But they don't, mate. It's one of the great lessons of me growing. We were similar ages. One of the great lessons of growing up is that people don't feel these burning senses of injustice in the way that people who do feel them feel them. You sort of think everybody is going to be repulsed by what Donald Trump is doing, but, you know, 40% of the country aren't repulsed yet and probably never will be.
I think it must be just attitudes and depends on the person.
Yeah, maybe. You know, maybe. What would happen if someone stood up in Beijing tomorrow in a factory or a university or a bank and started slagging off Xi Jinping?
I'm guessing there would be a quick response and the person would be taken away and who knows.
And then who knows? And that's it, isn't it? That's why we don't know much about China, because nobody wants us to. July 2017, the government of the People's Republic of China implemented restrictions on images of the anthropomorphic teddy bear Winnie the Pooh, particularly Disney's depiction of the character from the works of A.A. Milne. Censorship emerged after internet users began using images of Winnie the Pooh in satirical memes to compare the character to Xi Jinping, the General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party. I haven't mentioned Orwell yet today, have we? Tim, thank you, mate. Harry is in Grays in Essex. Harry, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Nice to talk to you again. Just some perspective. The government, as you would no doubt agree, it's for the people, right? So,
well, which
for the
people?
For the people.
Which people? Can't be for all the people. It's not for the people who disagree with them, is it? Or for the Uyghur people, who are also Chinese.
James, let me speak.
I will. I mean, you literally said as you would agree. So I can't let that go uncommented on if I don't agree, can I, Harry?
Let me give you a statistic, James.
Go on.
Since 1978, China has lifted 800 Chinese people out of extreme poverty.
Listen, you're going to get cross with me for interrupting again, but I think you mean more than 800.
800 million.
Yeah, there we go. So that was a good interruption, right?
Did I say 800? Sorry.
That's fine, but that's why I interrupt. If you say something wrong, like you will agree with this when I don't, or if you say 800 when you mean 800 million, then I will interrupt and you'll say, let me speak, and everybody loses.
Okay. Thank you for correcting me. You're 800 very million people out of poverty since 1978. China has built... To call China authoritarian regime, I do have issue with that, because I think it's more a socialist regime. Now, I'll give you a quick example, James. China has built high-speed rail since 2016 to now more than 31,000 miles all around the nation, and that's bigger than the entire world combined.
Which is obviously fantastic, but you're familiar...
No, hang on,
we're going to run out of time, and I'm going to pick on your points one by one, Harry. That's how it works.
The train is running lost, but
you're familiar with the... observation that Mussolini made the trains run on time, aren't you?
No, it's not that, James. What I'm trying to say is that it runs at lost. Every single ticket you sell is at lost. This is for the benefit of people. Compared to the UK, every year the train ticket price goes up, never runs on time.
Obviously, the train system in China is better than the train system in the UK.
But no, I'm not talking about the system itself. I'm talking about the system in
which it
was
governed. The worst thing about Xi Jinping, in your view?
About the Winnie the Pooh, everybody's keep talking about. Why is being so childish to your national leader? James,
what's the worst thing about him?
In the UK, you have freedom of speech, right?
Yeah, I do want you to answer my question.
No, but James, what has he changed?
What's the worst thing about Xi Jinping?
Nothing. I can't see. I don't see. He's done so much for the people.
But, I mean, is he perfect, do you think?
No one is perfect.
So name one of his imperfections.
Why would I do that?
Because I'm asking you to.
No, I wouldn't. I don't think.
Well, just say something bad about somebody in the Chinese government.
You're doing this. Why are we having a actual adult debate, and you.
Well, we
you
were. I mean, it's not an adult debate. If you refuse
to so little about China,
just,
I'm trying to
just
tell
say
you
something
about China.
And I'm well, you kind of are,
what,
but there's no need
James,
to shout
what's
at me.
More important, freedom of speech. Or for a woman to walk in the night free
They're
of
not,
being
it's,
hassled.
It's
what's important
it's not either
to
or.
The people.
It's not either or. You can have both.
You
so
have
why can't you say anything bad? Why can't you say anything?
What about your crime rates here?
Why can't you say anything? But I think our murder rates just hit a 40-year low, actually. But again, it's not either or. Why can't... I mean, you could have a very robust police force that is standing on every street corner with machine guns and still be able to say... The General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party is a bit of
Why
a prat.
Why would you do that, though?
Pardon? Because you believe it to be true. Because you believe
I mean,
it to be
you
true.
You can, James. Here's the comparison.
Just seriously.
Say whatever about your government. What has it changed, James?
Let's do it hypothetically. What has it changed?
In the US, it's the same. They can say whatever they like about the government. What has it changed?
Well, it's changed everything. We have complete freedom.
Look at the US. What has it changed? Look at the UK. What has it changed? In Europe, everything is slowing down. The economy is in dreadful position.
You are telling me, in no uncertain terms, that you don't want to ever have freedom of speech.
No, that's not what I'm saying, James.
Tell me why, for people listening, imagine, if you can, that you wanted to say something negative... About the General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party. Let's look at the forced sterilization.
Yeah.
Of
let me tell
no,
you
no, no,
what
you
happened,
have to let you
if
have
you,
to let me
you
speak.
Do that,
you have to
if
let
you
me
do
speak.
That.
You have to let me speak.
Yeah, go on.
Okay, because that's I mean you're taking away my freedom of speech now, and it's my radio show. So you've got the suppression of religious practices. You've got forced sterilization.
No, James,
you've got forced abortion. You've got forced contraception. You've got mosques being raised to the ground. You've got hundreds of thousands of children being forcibly separated from their parents and sent to boarding schools.
That is not true, James.
Yeah, but what if it is, Harry? You wouldn't be allowed to say so.
But how can you just compare? How can you say a situation that was?
If it was true,
because it isn't.
If it was true, and it is. You wouldn't be allowed to say so. So what is your only option if you're not allowed to say anything that's true? What can you do?
James,
your question, you said, what do you get in America? What do you get in the United Kingdom? And the answer is, you get the truth.
Here is a fundamental perception difference. For the Chinese...
I've answered your question. You get the truth.
For the Chinese, it's collectivism. It's all about collectivism.
I understand what collectivism
West,
is, but you asked what we got, what we benefited from, and the answer is, if I see something that
you
is...
You got the truth, James.
If I see something that is wrong, I can say
truth.
That it's wrong.
James,
if you see if you see something that is wrong, you have to pretend you haven't seen it.
You got the truth, James, but the problem is, what has he changed? You need to fundamentally...
I told you, the truth has to matter. The truth has to matter. There is truth, Harry, and there is truth and there is untruth.
True.
And if you can hold on to the truth, even if you are the only one, you will not go mad. And if you can't hold on to the truth, you will go mad. And you will start claiming on national radio that things happening are not happening.
Look, James, America is spending billions every year.
It's got nothing to do with what I just said.
Listen, on anti-China propaganda. So I can't tell you whether or not that's true.
You're not allowed to.
Hard evidence to say that is true.
You're not allowed to. There is hard evidence. We're not going to get beyond the point that you're proving George Orwell's most famous diktat. You will go mad if you don't hold on to the truth.
You get the truth, James, but has it changed fundamentally?
Yeah, well, it's changed my ability to describe... It's changed my ability to describe reality.
Look at the problem...
I'm allowed to say...
It hasn't changed anything fundamentally. That's what I'm trying to say.
Why do you live here?
Huh? Why do I live here?
Yeah.
Because I'm married here.
You can move back to China.
I'm not slagging off UK, yeah? It's my second home. I love it.
Why do you love it?
Why do I love it?
Yeah.
For the literature, for the music, for the lovely people.
Would I be able to publish a book in China called How They Broke China? Would I be able to sing pop songs about how awful the government is? Like Bob Dylan does? Or like Bruce Springsteen does? What is the music that you claim to love?
What's the music? Rock and roll.
You look after yourself, Harry, yeah?
Listen, James.
You
can't have...
I did, Harry.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Keir Starmer's in Shanghai on the final day of his visit to China. President Trump has claimed it's dangerous for the UK to seek closer economic ties with Beijing. Deals on free visa travel and whiskey tariffs have already been agreed. Trade Minister Sir Chris Bryant has told LBC inconsistencies with our relationship with China needs to end.
We have to plough our own course in relation to these deals. And I just point out that the French have visited many times. This is the first time by a British Prime Minister since 2018. French have visited many times, the Germans have, and President Trump himself is going in April.
A review has found no evidence of unusually higher rates of childhood cancer in Corby in Northamptonshire. The local council has been looking into local families' concerns of a potential link with the historic dumping of toxic waste in the town. The authority says its findings have been reviewed by independent health experts. Reform UK has withdrawn its support for a council candidate accused of posting racist and anti-Semitic comments on social media. Mike Manning is standing in an upcoming by-election. He's apologised and says if he could withdraw his name from the ballot, he would. Speaking to LBC, Reform's leader Nigel Farage claimed that his party has implemented the highest standard of vetting for its candidates.
We vet. I think we probably have a higher standard of vetting at local level than the other parties. Do people lie to us? Do people not tell us about accounts that are in other names? It does happen. Would I rather it didn't? Absolutely. But every month that goes by, we set the criteria higher and higher. You know, politics does attract some wonderfully good people, but some wrong ones too.
Some train services running out of London Euston have been suspended this morning due to a fire close to the railway station. Emergency crews were called out to a fire in a building near the tracks in Chalk Farm earlier today. More than 60 firefighters are currently at the scene. And LBC understands the Treasury considered plans to end free entry to museums and galleries for international visitors. The proposals were weighed up as part of spending cuts in November's budget. The idea was eventually scrapped, though, after pushback from culture ministers. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 14 at 10,185. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most with patchy rain and hill snow in the north. Some heavy rain and strong winds for the south and west. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
On a windswept walk in Carmarthen, while someone tries to use your card details to hire a speedboat in Cannes. This is the moment that you relax, knowing that Barclays Advanced Tech has helped to spot the fraud in under a second, and their expert team are on hand to close it down. So you can get back to being windswept. Oh! Just one of the ways we're protecting our customers 24/7. Search Barclays Fraud Protection. Barclays. Make money work for you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Was it yesterday I asked you whether you can die of irony? Or was it the day before? Did I just hear Nigel Farage in our news bulletin saying that politics attracts wrong'uns, as if that was somehow a bad thing, as opposed to a career opportunity? Or indeed a definition of pretty much his entire adult life. Politics attracts wrong'uns, says Nigel Farage. More on that story, no doubt, later this hour, because I think that latest Reform UK politician who has been found to be a hideous racist, or at least has been found to have posted hideously racist posts, and I still remain baffled by what on earth it is about all these hideous racist people, or hideous racism-adjacent people, that are so attracted to Nigel Farage, the enemy of wrong'uns and racism. What on earth it can be that attracts so many of them to him? More on that later in the hour. A quick line on Orwell, and I hope Harry is still listening. I think this is the final line of the book, isn't it? Or it's certainly very close to the end of it. But it was all right. Everything was all right. The struggle was finished. He had won the victory over himself. He loved Big Brother. And by the end of that book, which I doubt you're allowed to read in China, but you are allowed to read in Gray's in Essex, it was true that Winston Smith had been successfully brainwashed into believing that freedom of speech was a bad or worthless thing. That's the whole point of the book, which is, of course, I think more a critique of Stalinism than anything else. 8 minutes after 11 is the time. And that is why, I guess, we know so little about China, because who is going to tell us? Who is going to tell us the truth when the government-sanitized version of reality is so at odds with the truth? And that's why the parallels with Donald Trump are hideously irresistible, because as John Bolton, his own national security advisor, has said, he looks at regimes like Xi Jinping's or Vladimir Putin's, and he simply thinks to himself, why can't I behave like that? Why are judges allowed to stop me doing whatever I want to do? Why are elections, why are elected politicians allowed to stop me from doing whatever I want to do? Why can't I send people out onto the streets of Minneapolis just to shoot whoever they want without getting into so much trouble or without running a risk? Of course, I'm going to release all the insurrectionists. I'm going to pardon all the criminals who support me sufficiently in various ways. And I'm going to pretend that I'm a champion of law and order. So what are the three biggest enemies of truth? I would say the three biggest enemies of truth are journalism, judges. I beg your pardon. The three biggest enemies of attempts to suppress the truth. You're looking at the judiciary, you're looking at judges, you're looking at journalists, and you're looking at elections. The problem with elections, of course, is that in a country where there are no judges or journalists allowed to do their job properly, you don't get to vote from an informed perspective, which is why we should be a little less smug in this country about how free we are, because the stranglehold on our media that is exercised by right-wing shills, essentially agitating on behalf of wealth, on behalf of epic wealth, turned us into a country that was so spectacularly uninformed and ill-informed in the run-up to the 2016 referendum that we ended up voting to become the first population in history to impose economic sanctions on itself. And we are not much better. In fact, I don't know if we're any better at all today. 10 minutes after 11 is the time. And here is the subject to which we lead almost, or we are led almost inexorably by that observation. I don't know how much attention you paid to the speech that Kemi Badenoch, the leader of the opposition, gave this week, in which she was complaining about politicians who are desperate attention seekers. And Nigel Farage just complained about politics attracting wrong-uns. I swear, if you can die of irony, I might not be here on Monday. It is extraordinary to see the levels of hypocrisy and absence of self-awareness on display. So Kemi Badenoch gave a speech accusing other politicians of being sort of shameless attention seekers. She described her own party as a party of serious people, not drama queens. Okay. And in so doing, she essentially told what you would once have described as centrists. She essentially told centrists they are not welcome in their party. I won't apologize. Well, I'm just like, do you want to hear some clips? This is actually important, even if she isn't. Increasingly irrelevant on the political stage, but not irrelevant in British political history, because she will probably go down, unless there's an extraordinary change of weather, she will probably go down as the leader who presided over the death of the Conservative Party in the only form any of us have ever known it. And how much of that will be her fault and how much of it will be simple inheritance will be for the historians of the future to judge. But by telling people who are not extreme that they are not welcome in the party, she is probably accelerating the demand. The idea that you can fight Farage on far right territory is, I'd probably put my money on this, I'd probably put my chips on this, but the idea that you can fight Farage on far right territory and win is very bold, let's just say, shall we? Very bold. But that is what she's done this week. She has said, I won't apologise to those walking away because they don't like the new direction. We only want Conservatives. So in a way, you know, on those days when I tell you not to ring in if dot, 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 I say, don't ring me if you're going to do this, or don't ring. And I sound like a bit of a prig, right, with a G. And I do it because I've been doing this job for so long now. I kind of want to cut through the obvious bits. So if we're doing a phone-in about obesity, I'd want to cut through the two callers telling me that we don't really understand how body mass index works in this country. Because I know that, and my conversation is conducted in a space that already absorbs that knowledge. But it's a bit arrogant of me, or if not arrogant, it's a little bit presumptuous, previous of me, because you might not have listened to those calls before. Just because I've listened to them 500 times doesn't mean you've listened to them at all. But it is an odd thing for a radio phone-in host to do. To say, don't ring me if. But I'm glad that I do it, because it means that we get to the gold a little bit quicker. We get to the wheat a little bit quicker than we would if we had to sort through a little bit more chaff. And I love chaff, don't get me wrong, up with chaff. But, there's a time and a place for everything. Kemi Badenoch is essentially banning Tories from voting Tory, which is an extraordinary thing for someone who never commits gaffes to do. We only want Conservatives. I won't apologise to those walking away because they don't like the new direction. In fact, you can listen to her saying this because you could be forgiven for thinking that I'm making it up.
So I won't apologise to those walking away because they don't like the new direction. We only want Conservatives. But to those who are defecting, who don't actually disagree with our policies, I will say, I'm sorry you didn't win the leadership contest. I'm sorry you didn't get a job in the shadow cabinet. I'm sorry you didn't get into the Lords. But you are not offering a plan to fix this country. This is a tantrum dressed up as politics. When my kids have a tantrum, I don't give up or change my mind. I send them to their room. And I say to everyone else, if that tantrum ever found its way into government, we would all pay the price. Because just like Labour, they do not have a plan for government. But there's another group of former politicians who are in denial that the world has changed, who don't want to admit that immigration is too high, and who don't believe that the structures of the Blair era are badly broken. And those structures are responsible for the problems that we have with our borders, our veterans, and not being able to choose who gets our public services. This is my message to them. We're about the future, not the past. Yeah. We're not trying to recreate 2006, and it's not 2016 anymore. We are not refighting those battles. It's 2026, and the world has changed.
2016, of course, refers to David Cameron's assumption of the leadership of the Conservative Party, and love him or loathe him, he went on to form two governments, to, if not win outright in 2010, he won outright in 2015, and he formed two governments. It's quite bizarre to say the most successful Conservative leader since Margaret Thatcher is our enemy. We don't want to be anything like that. But the really mad thing about that was the admission that there's no difference between them and reform. This is really strange politically, that the admission that there's no difference, because if you're walking away to a party that has the same policies as us or agrees with our policies, then you must be having a tantrum. And again, that's just not very bright, because if you're doing it out of self-interest, you're doing it because the party that they're walking away to is currently much more popular than the party that you're leading. But that's an extraordinary moment in British politics, because it is essentially the Tory party. Imagine a flag that's been stuck in the ground by Nigel Farage, right? And Kemi Badenoch is coming along and sticking a smaller flag on top of his flag. I don't know if you remember in Robin Hood. Do you remember in Robin Hood? At least in some of the Robin Hood films, when Robin of Loxley fires his arrow at the target and everyone... his enemy fires his arrow at the target and everyone goes, oh, poor old Robin, he's lost now. And then Robin of Loxley comes along with his bow and arrow, with his longbow, and his aim is so perfect that he fires an arrow and it splits the shaft of the previous arrow that's already wiggling in the butt. Sorry, I should rephrase that. He splits the shaft. I should rephrase all of this, shouldn't I? His arrow breaks the other arrow. I think that's a lot safer than talking about shafts being split and wiggling. Thank you, Keith. But yes, you can wiggle your butt if you want, but I'm anyway. That's the strangest thing I can remember seeing in politics in a very long time. Here is an extremist party of, as David Cameron described, the previous incarnation of the Nigel Farage roadshow, full of, racist, what was it, loonies, Fruitcakes, loonies and closet racists. That's still Farage, of course it is. Although, if you were to call them loonies now, I think that he would probably either call the police, would he? Or threaten to sue you at anyway, I digress. The king of free speech calling the police at the moment on banter. But the idea that you're admitting that you were on the same policy platform as the fruitcakes, loonies and closet racists, that your own colleagues are defecting to the fruitcakes, loonies and closet racists, admitting that you're the same, that this is the same. The only reason you're leaving is because you're having a tantrum, because we stand for the same things. We too are fruitcakes, loonies and closet racists, she's saying, while slagging off the bloke who called the fruitcakes, loonies and closet racists, fruitcake, loonies and closet racists before winning two general elections or forming two governments. But what she's saying to Andy Street and David Gawk and the former leader of the Scottish Tories, Ruth Davidson. Well, what she's saying to these people is essentially, bog off. We don't want you. That's absolutely incredible. It really is. There was a brief outbreak of self-awareness, I think.
There are people in politics who don't really know what they are doing or why. They just want to be in the room. They want to be on top. They want access, attention, and advancement. And when they don't get their way, they create drama.
Yeah, down with that sort of thing, Kemi. What do you do now? Was it Tamara in Telford? We took a call middle of last year. Tamara in Telford was it what I would describe as a normal Tory? As in someone who would be repulsed by the racism that Nigel Farage and his colleagues revel in. A normal Tory, a David Gawk, a Dominic Grieve, a Rory Stewart, perhaps, an Anna Soubry, an Amber Rudd. Okay, I nearly said Hurd again. That's a mental block for me. All of these people who I would describe, for want of a better word, as normal Tories. Untoxic, and they might be relatively toxic compared to the politicians that you like, but compared to the Conservative Party and the Reform Party, which the leader of the Conservatives admits is essentially the same thing under a different name. What on earth are you going to do? And I know that there are plenty of people in this category that listen to me, that listen to this program, listen to LBC, of course there are. What are you going to do? The leader of the Conservative Party has just told you to get lost. You voted Tory all your life. That the Remain supporting wing of the Tory Party formed governments in 2010 and 2015. And that the general election that was won by a Tory in 2017 was won by a Tory who supported Remain. Three election victories. Three leaders who were obviously cognizant of the idiocy of leaving the European Union, albeit that Theresa May had to pretend that she wasn't for a while. And the leader of the Conservative Party is now telling normal Tories to get lost because she only wants the weirdos. Where do you go? So, if you're not one of the people that I'm talking about, how big a moment is this? Now, this is surely the end of the peer show, isn't it, for the Tories? If Badenoch is literally saying anybody who's not sympathetic to Farage and his friends is not really welcome in our party anymore, and anybody who leaves is a big, fat, smelly poo. I mean, what was she actually saying? Anybody who leaves my tin pot version of that party over there that's leading in the polls is a coward or having a tantrum. But if you are in that category, where on earth do you go? Just talk to me about how you're coping. This is today a platform for people who thought that they would be in charge forever. What, One Nation Tories? Centrist Tories? Sensible Tories? Non-racist Tories? Pro-EU Tories? People who thought they'd be in charge forever. Come the end of Blairism, 2010, Cameron comes in, even more so in 2015 when he beat Miliband. If he hadn't called that referendum, he might still be Prime Minister. These are people who thought they'd be in power forever. Or at least there or thereabouts. If you weren't in power, you were just waiting for your go, right? So Keir Starmer got in, and then you're waiting for your turn. We are the party of government. We are the party of power. the people that made up that party have been told by the leader of that party to just clear off and shut up. In the words of Gavin Williamson, Tory senators should shut up and go away. Where do you go? Genuine question. 0345 6060 973. And how are you processing your homelessness? Hit the numbers now, you will get through.
This is LBC.
It's not easy being a clump stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
The Virgin Atlantic holiday sale is now on. This is your sign to dive into the crystal water of an ancient cave pool in Mexico. Or dry off in the sun on a white sand beach in the Maldives. Or pour yourself into the culture and chaos of a night market in Thailand. Seize the sale. Book in store and online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected travel dates apply. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com/terms.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
I'm Leah and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right. So my GP referred me to the CDC, had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England wide.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
It's 25 minutes after 11 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I'm beginning to think, writes Patrick, that Russia didn't listen to Sir, brackets lol, close brackets, Gavin Williamson. I reckon he'll be the next defector, by the way, if you're interested in such things. Is he still in Parliament? Couldn't tell you, probably. Make a list. Go on. I don't know who you want to put at the top of it. Probably Ken Clark. He's the sort of patron saint of sensible Tories. For the avoidance of doubt, I know that none of these politicians are perfect. There is, Harry and Grace's contribution earlier about China notwithstanding, there is no such thing as a perfect politician. All of these politicians have flaws, some of them bigger than others. But make a list. Tories you quite liked. Or, if you're a Tory, Tories you loved. Ken Clark at the top of the list. Michael Heseltine. Right? Ken Clark, Michael Heseltine, come on. Talk about arguably the two finest politicians of the late 20th century that were never actually Prime Minister. Right-wing Tory politicians that were never actually Prime Minister. Ken Clark, Michael Heseltine. Then the sort of modern carriers of those standards. So you would have your Dominic Greaves and your David Gawkes. You'd have your Anna Soubrys. You'd have your Amber Rudds. I mean, the list, I could go on. Rory Stewart, that's seven without even looking at notes. Make that list, the Conservatives. And then you're going to have to stick David Cameron and George Osborne on the list, because austerity notwithstanding, they were not toxic. They were not toxic. Who else was in those cabinets? Who was sitting? Ian Duncan Smith's a bit dodgy, I think. Not least because he does things that just make no sense at all, while sometimes occasionally doing things that... do make sense, but he was a Brexiter. So you're looking for people wise enough and knowledgeable enough to understand that leaving the European Union would be a really stupid thing to do. And you're also looking at a Conservative Party whose leader has told all of them to get lost. Tell me what it's like to be that homeless. I really want your calls on this. 03, because it's so important and it's so mad that it's going on in plain sight without us properly recognising it. Oath, John Major, God, you're making the list. I was only joking. It was rhetorical, that. John Major on the list, Dominic Grieve on the list, Caroline Noakes on the list, Robert Buckland on the list, Rory Stewart on the list, Ruth Davidson on the list. You could go on forever. Feel free to, actually. I know Boris got rid of them all, but you're a supporter of this kind of politics. I'm not talking about the actual politicians. You are a supporter of the politics that they represented. The John Majors, the Michael Heseltines, the Ken Clarks. They didn't agree about everything with each other, but they represented something that, had it ended up in power, and under Major, of course it did, you would have not felt frightened or freaked out. How, if you are a supporter of that brand of politics, traditional conservatism, moderate conservatism, conservatism that doesn't obsess endlessly about pronouns and immigration, if that is your conservatism, who the hell do you vote for now? 0345 60 6093. Saeed Avasi. Again, some people in Cameron's cabinet or in Cameron's generation. You don't have to go all the way back to the rebels under Margaret Thatcher. What do you do now? Where do you go? I just want you to tell me what you're doing politically. Are you just spiralling? Are you floating around in the atmosphere, wondering where you're going to land next? Have you given up on politics entirely? You have no home. And it's not just that you have no home. You've gone from being in the biggest stately home in the history of British politics to sleeping in a poncho in the woods. You've got nothing. You've got no structure. The Tory party don't want you. They admit under Badenoch that they're exactly the same as the Reform outfit. But you're a conservative. You don't want to vote Labour. Ed Davies asking for your vote today. The Lib Dems are coming calling. Does that work? Theresa May once talked about the nasty party. People that were flawed and imperfect and you didn't agree with them. Margaret Thatcher would not fit into Kemi Badenoch's party. Not on many social issues. Nicholas Soames used to ring the programme. Old Nick from Westminster. You'd know it was him immediately because he had more plums in his mouth than Sainsbury's has in its fruit and veg section. So, okay, let's do it this way as well. What's actually happened? How has this happened? 0345 60 6093. But crucially, what are you going to do? What are you actually doing? I've said many times on this programme, give me a call if you're homeless, but I don't think I've ever previously addressed it as traditional supporters of the Conservative Party. Give me a call if you are truly, as a consequence of what has happened both in the last few days under Kemi Badenoch and the last few years under Johnson and Truss and even Sunak, you have been rendered politically homeless. What's that like? That's all I'm asking. What is it like as a conservative to be completely without representation in UK politics? Wow. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer's in Shanghai on the final day of his visit to China. President Trump has claimed it's dangerous for the UK to seek closer economic ties with Beijing. A council says it's found no evidence of higher rates of childhood cancer in a town in Northamptonshire. Families in Corby have been concerned about a potential link with historic waste dumping in the area. And two men have been arrested as part of an ongoing investigation into thousands of tons of waste dumped in Oxfordshire. The mountain of rubbish was first discovered near Kidlington last summer. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with patchy rain and hill snow in the north, heavy rain and strong winds for the south and west, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV, and here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/cleanenergy.
EasyJet's big orange sale is now on. Beat the blues and book the beach with up to £500 off package holidays and up to 25% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATOL protected. T's and C's apply.
Hi, just leaving work now. Sorry it's a bit loud. So I was thinking we could get Mackey's tonight. Had a Big Mac on my mind all day and delivery fee on the app is now from 99p. So you in? Of course you are. Love you. Bye.
exclusively on the McDonald's app. 18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Participating restaurants. Serving times and T&Cs apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Okay, do emails. Ah, burnt toast. And now I've got to sort my repeat prescription.
Or just tap the NHS app.
The one I've already got?
Yep, you can check test results, view your GP health record and request repeat prescriptions anytime, anywhere.
All while the kettle's boiling?
Before it boils. And turning on notifications means you'll know the moment you get a new message. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Never miss a message. Request repeat prescriptions and more when you tap the NHS app.
A Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 26 minutes after 12. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where a speech, Kemi Badenoch, you probably didn't notice, gave earlier this week. I kind of got referred to it by a colleague because of some of the stuff it has contained that won't really go properly reported by members of the media still loyal to the Conservative Party. It's over. And the only chance of success or survival under Kemi Badenoch is to be better at doing the bigotry than Nigel Farage. And everyone knows he's brilliant at bigotry. She is literally telling the likes of David Gawke and Ruth Davidson to get lost. They are not welcome here. This has followed their attempt to launch a sort of party within the party that would recognise the politics that had won them. Well, the politics that had turned them into the most successful election-winning machine in the history of Western politics. But that's not for Kemi Badenoch. She thinks she can do a better job. Where does it leave you? Sam's in Colchester. Sam, what would you like to say?
Thank you very much for having me on.
You're most welcome.
Yeah, I'm frankly, every morning now, my head is just scrambled.
Yeah.
I think your analogy of moving from the stately home to a poncho in the woods is very very accurate, because that's exactly how I feel politically right now. It's when Jenrick made the move to reform, and then Kemi came out and said, "We're going to do this speech." I thought, do you know what? This is a glimmer of hope here for me now, because she's going to do it. She's going to say, "Right, we're flushing the cesspit of the weird Tories out of the party, and we're gonna take the party in the direction that we've been so successful with in the past, and give it a refreshing new look."
Yeah.
And she did the complete opposite to that. As you say, she planted that flag right on top of the reform flag, because they love their flags.
This is also true. Well spotted.
Yeah. And now I'm just like, well, she's, like you say, literally told me, "We don't want your vote.
Yeah.
We don't want your politics. Off you go." So now I'm kind of in a position where I'm looking at, obviously, the Labour Party, the Lib Dems. And really, for me, they're the only two parties that right now, if I was to vote tomorrow, that I would put my mark next to either one of them. But, I've got there's a lot of soul searching and thinking that I've got to do on where my vote goes in the future, because at the moment it's scrambled.
You've articulated the position I was trying to defend. You've done it in about a tenth of the time it took me to ask the question, so I'm very grateful to you for that, Sam. But I love the word scrambled, because it's very hard to fully grasp the scale of what's happened, unless I look at it through the lens of somebody like you. I'm not suggesting for a minute that you had a sense of entitlement or smugness, but it just probably never crossed. It certainly never crossed my mind that particular brand of conservatism would have no home in my lifetime, let alone within 10 years of the Brexit vote.
You know, we as soon as we had that that Brexit vote, it did polarise the party. You know, it essentially had your weirdos on one side and your traditional centrists. Tories who could kind of rein the Peter the Forest's, the Jacob Rees-Mogg's back in because they had that kind of air of sensibility to them. And as soon as Boris got into power and then subsequently left through the tirade of mess that he left behind, it kind of gave that tranche of the right to really just...
There was nothing left. He chucked them all out as well, remember, in 2019. Yeah. Philip Hammond, we haven't mentioned Philip Hammond, Chancellor of the Exchequer, to expelled by his own constituency party in the blink of an eye.
I know. And, you know, over the last sort of 10 years, like you say, since Brexit, we've slowly watched the erosion of the Tory party values that it kind of grew up from, just slowly being corroded into this far-right rhetoric rubbish that is being ploughed by the likes of Farage and Jenrick and co.
That's just a statement of fact. It barely qualifies as opinion. It's simply a description of what is going on. I feel for you, Sam, and I imagine that not that long ago, you and I would have been at loggerheads. We'd have been locking horns. But it's healthy for democracy to have. Well, and back to to Harry and Grays. You have two parties now, essentially, with their noses in the same trough, and it's a trough of reality denial. You know, it's a question of who is further up Donald Trump's fundament, really, Nigel Farage or Cammy Badenoch. Although, obviously, on the question of condemning him for his hideous comments about the British war dead, Cammy Badenoch was way, 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 way ahead of Nigel Farage. Which reminds me, it's Dick Littlejohn Day. We must have a look at what he has to say about the leader of the United States in the wake of the murders on the streets of Minneapolis and those still failure to make any amends or apologise for what he said about British soldiers. Some mealy-mouthed post on social media, probably written by somebody else, does not an apology make. He's a very, very tough guy, Dick Littlejohn. He's got very strong opinions. So he'll definitely be writing about the most important issues in the world today in his Daily Mail column. We must go and have a look at that. And people like him, of course, are responsible for what we're describing. A bunch of columnists, an awful number of members of the media, elected to go with the bigots and the racists when they broke cover. And it couldn't have happened without Brexit. And indeed, Brexit couldn't have happened without the Daily Mail. So I become a little bit anarchy when it comes to explaining how all of these things are linked. But I don't think anyone would argue with me now. Thank you, Sam. Adam is in Rutland. Adam, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James.
Hello, mate.
Good to speak to you again. Been a long time. But yeah, I thought I'd give you a call because I feel like I fit right in this category. So. Yeah. Always voted Tory, from a sin, but always voted Tory. Obviously, did have a problem with Brexit because I was pro-Remain.
Well, you understood. You understood things.
Absolutely, yeah. And there were sensible voices within the Conservative Party who called out for what it was. It was going to be hugely, damaging to the economy.
Yes,
but I hadn't actually heard the full speech from Kemi until you played it this morning.
Oh, sorry.
So I'd seen a clip, what the Tories have put out on sort of X and places like that. And I thought, okay, this is good. This is an opportunity for us, regain that centre ground, become successful at elections again. You know, in all honesty, I started to think we would win the next election, to be honest, because I thought this is regaining the territory that's currently vacant.
You don't want to buy a bridge, do you?
I know. Yeah, I agree. But this is the difficulty for me because I'm very much socially, fiscally, mentally very conservative person. Yeah. That's just who I am. But I agree with fiscal sensibility, which is why Brexit was ridiculous.
And Badenoch was a big trust cheerleader as well. Badenoch and Farage were both running, falling over each other to tell us why Liz Truss's budget was a stroke of financial genius.
Don't get me wrong, I am no huge fan of Kemi. However, I feel that there is still members within that party, the majority of members in that party, who are sensible, who do align to the views.
She just told them all to get lost. She literally just told them all to get lost. I won't apologise to those walking away because they don't like the new direction. That's you.
It is. And where does that leave my MP? My MP is Alicia Kearns. She's very much on the sensible side of the Tories. So where does that leave her? It's something I would love to hear from her about, to say,
based on that message, where do we go? What do we do? You know, it's
existential, this. And it's actually quite hard for me to properly articulate what we're describing, because it's a bit like waking up and the sun's not in the sky. The Tories, as an electoral force with a fairly easily distinguishable ideology, don't exist anymore.
No, and it's enraging.
I bet it is.
It's absolutely enraging because, you know, we're being asked to, consider lending your vote to the Lib Dems or to Labour or to other. We don't want to.
No, and also until when? I don't. Well, she's. I mean, as you know, I'm telling you stuff you already know. She categorically and specifically said, "We are not the party of David Cameron. We are not the party of 2016." I mean, it's a bit like a football manager taking over a team that has had three Champions League victories, ending in 2015. It hasn't won won the FA Cup in 2017. It's won the league three or four times in the last 20 years. It's done absolutely nothing for the best part of a decade. And she's come out and started slagging off the managers that were in charge when the trophy cabinet was full of silverware.
I said you can't out-reform.
Of course you can't.
And we don't. And there's a large portion of the Conservative Party that still exists that do not want to be reformed. Otherwise, they would have gone over. You know, Jenrick, Braverman, etc. That's fine. They can go. And there was a huge opportunity here to retake that centre-right ground.
Do you think there was? This is the great question, isn't it? Is attack to the middle, and you will hoover up voters who've been essentially unrepresented since 2019, since Boris Johnson became leader of the Conservative Party. But they either think you don't exist, or I don't know what the alternative is.
Which is just untrue. You know, this is why, you know, we won elections previously, because that is the ground that was held. There was an opportunity with Labour not being particularly welcomed at the moment. You know, they're not particularly popular. Still a large proportion of the population. You know, they're polling at 30-odd% reform. That's not the large majority of the population. There is still a big group that wants centre ground, normal politics, normal parties.
Yeah.
So there was a ground to take. And
she's essentially said, if you're looking for normal, you've come to the wrong place. That's what she's done. That's what she's done in this speech. I genuinely think we should have probably talked about it sooner. Natasha went to it, but it was on the same day as PMQ, so we couldn't move to it. But she drew my attention to some of the contents of the speech, and it is absolutely ridiculous what she's doing. There's always the slim chance. This is what I call the Matt Hancock moment. There's always a slim chance that they're actually geniuses and we're the stupid ones. We need to acknowledge that, Adam. It could be that she's a genius and we're the idiots.
Well, I'm not so sure about that.
It's 11:46.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
President Trump was elected for the second time. Many figures in British politics, especially on the right, welcomed his election because they said it would be a good thing for our country and it would be a good thing for the West. Since then, he has threatened to invade Greenland. He's undermined a NATO alliance. He's cozied up to President Putin. He's now insulted our brave soldiers and veterans in Afghanistan. Do you still think that it was a good thing he was elected?
He's made NATO look at itself and effectively say, step up. Put your resources
completely
in.
Undermined it.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down,
not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw. It's a very personal draw. So you think of a personal way to spend £1 million.
I would hire a hype man so everything I do would suddenly be epic.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw. So
let's go, Kev. Goat cheese bagel for lunch.
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
Tuesday night on the sofa, watching telly with Mum again.
Male hawkers stay with the mothers for life.
This is the moment Stephen chose to speak to Barclays about Mortgage Boost, so he could borrow more with help from family or friends. We're helping first-time buyers get on the property ladder sooner. Search Barclays Mortgages. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
Psst. Hey, dogs. Yeah, I'm talking to you. If you're tired of dry, tasteless kibble or slop that plops out of a tin, you're going to want to hear this. Butternut Box makes only the freshest dog food with juicy meat and tender veg. It's the kind of food that makes dogs, tongue out, running around the kitchen happy. Let's hope your human heard this too. Butternut Box. Fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 11:49. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And of course, the apparent idiocy of Kemi Badenoch's decision to stick her flag on top of Nigel Farage's flag on the mountain of bigotry. It might be electorally successful for one of them, but it ain't going to be her unless something extraordinary happens in the not too distant future is highlighted by two things. The reason why Farage is currently hoovering up the most ridiculous and disgraced Tories. Imagine thinking when Nadine Dorries defected to Reform that wouldn't be the bottom of the barrel. I've often wondered what is below the bottom of the barrel. When you scrape the bottom of the barrel, what happens? What Farage is doing now with the defections to his own party is he's broken the bottom of the barrel and he's using the planks to dig a hole. And at the bottom of it, he finds people like Nadeem Zahawi and Honest Bob Jenrick. And it ain't over yet. But he has to hoover up the most ridiculous and disgraced Tories because the people who are most naturally attracted to Nigel Farage are, to paraphrase David Cameron back in 2016 or thereabouts, they are fruitcakes, loonies and closet racists, or our core audience, as Kemi Badenoch now describes them, our base. Which brings us back to Henry Reilly, who was yesterday sharing with us news of, surprise, surprise, I mean, it's a little bit dog bites man, Henry, but a Reform councillor who was posting hideously whose account was hosting hideously anti-Semitic and racist messages. What's the latest?
Well, he has now been dropped. I won't repeat the allegations because we heard them yesterday and they were unpleasant. And as a Lib Dem MP described it to me, senior Daisy Cooper, they were xenophobic, racist and anti-Semitic, her words. Today we've learned, as a result of, yesterday I told you Reform were looking into it, they launched an investigation into this, they have now dropped the candidate. So a Reform spokesperson has told me, following an investigation, it is clear Mike Manning did not declare his X account to the party during the vetting process. The party is certain the comments were made by him, finds them unacceptable, and will no longer be supporting his candidacy. Now, he is still going to be on the ballot paper, because this by-election, which is in Cleveland and Redcar Council, is taking place next month, and it is too late to withdraw, but he will not publicly have the support of Reform. He would be an independent if elected, but confirmation there from Reform UK. We have also been, in fact, I should tell you, Mike Manning has also said, in light of the unfortunate tweets I made, for which I profusely apologise, I have now resigned from the Reform Party. If I could, I would withdraw my name from the ballot. And there's one comment, actually, from a bloke who says, shame that. I'm not sure if that's sarcastic or if that's meant seriously. We have heard this morning from Nigel Farage as well, the leader. He's been speaking to our colleague, our LBC reporter, Liam Gotting, about Reform UK's vetting process as a result of this.
There is a completely disproportionate way this is looked at. We vet. I think we probably have a higher standard of vetting at local level than the other parties. Do people lie to us? Do people not tell us about accounts that are in other names? It does happen. Would I rather it didn't? Absolutely. But every month that goes by, we set the criteria higher and higher. You know, politics does attract some wonderfully good people, but some wrong ones too.
Yeah, you can say that again. Do we have any idea of what a vetting process that doesn't look at candidates' social media is? Because they were unaware of this account.
They were unaware of this account.
Candidate. So, but there is a, so you're saying that not only there is a vetting process, but it's a brilliant vetting process. It's possible it goes to a different school, but it apparently doesn't include... Look, was the accountant in his own name?
No, it wasn't in his own name, but you'll recall the reason we've discovered this is because we've made the link between that account, allegedly, and Mike Manning, so...
So you did this?
Yeah, well, not the tweets, yeah, but the
but you did the linking together. So you did the vetting?
Yes.
So you managed to do something that the vetting process Nigel Farage describes as being better than all the other parties failed to do.
In essence.
And you're a very busy man. You're often out doing all sorts of nonsense for Nick Ferrari.
Very busy.
Eating burgers and pestering Chinese people. I mean, there's all sorts of things on your to-do list. And so just in the margins of your day, you have managed to establish that this bloke was a reform candidate and was posting all sorts of hideous racism and anti-Semitism. But Nigel Farage's brilliant vetting system that is better than all the others... didn't.
Yes, he did say it's the highest standard.
Well,
it's
not time for modesty, Henry.
And a brilliant vetting system. And, I mean, it's important to say they did use a vetting company. You'll recall this, James. It's run by a former Number 10 advisor. And then they dropped that
vetting
company.
They were suing them at one point.
They've now dropped that, but they were going to sue the vetting company that did the initial vetting when Richard Tice was the leader. But they now do their own.
And are they suing them, or did they drop that legal action?
I think they... No, in fact, they have dropped that. They're no longer suing
them.
So
they're not suing them, and they're not using them to do the vetting. Why don't they use you?
Well, I mean, a busy man, as you say. Well, this is true. You know, burgers to eat.
Yeah, and Chinese people to pester.
It's my weekend.
I'll tell you what would be really embarrassing. If this vetting process had failed to stop another wrong-un, like, for example, today.
Well, it's funny you say that, actually. A Reform UK council chairman, one of their councillors on Warwickshire, has... had to resign from the party whip because they've been found to be illegally running two unsafe rental properties.
Oh, boy.
A rogue landlord, not my words, but the words of Tamworth Borough Council, Edward Harris, who runs two HMOs, Houses of Multiple Occupancy, in Tamworth in Staffordshire. The council said it had issued closure notices on the homes after discovering multiple serious safety features, including a lack of central heating and hot water, no working fire alarms, inadequate cooking facilities, and unsafe access to outdoor areas. Edward Harris, who has previously said he would take full responsibility, full accountability over the homes, has now resigned his position of chairman of the council. He's now an independent councillor.
I think I know what their vetting process is.
Okay, go on.
I think we let's do some role play. You be the reform potential candidate, I'll be the vetting process.
Hello, I'd like to apply to be a reform candidate.
Oh, hello, that'll be £125, please.
Whoa, it's a bit steep.
I think that's actually true. That's not even a throwaway line. Well, please take a seat. I've got one question for you.
Yes, sir. What?
Are you a wrong-un?
No.
You're on. You're hired. You're on the list. Fantastic. See you next week. You're running for office. Yeah, you could be Chancellor of the Exchequer by next Christmas if you play your cards right.
Well, I'm sure they would. Nigel Farage would say that they have a higher standard than all of the other parties. He has said that to us this morning.
Of course he has. And also that politics does attract wrong-uns. Finally, speaking on a subject that he knows a lot about. Well, that's not fair because he also knows an awful lot about free speech.
But hey, that's fine. You can say what you like. I don't care. Because that's what free speech is, and in a sense, this has all been going wrong now for a couple of decades. We've kind of forgotten the Voltairean principles that we'll fight and defend to the death your right to say something that we fundamentally disagree with. That is the absolute foundation, if you think about it, of free speech, of democracy, of living in freedom. It's kind of why we fought two world wars at massive, massive cost to defend that very principle for ourselves and for many, many others around the country. And I first became worried about all this with cancel culture.
It's as if our leaders have forgotten who we were, and when we want to question it, now they will do everything they can to crush free speech online.
We need to remember there are limits to free speech. We know what they are. Shouting fire in a crowded theatre, the classic one back from the 19th century, inciting violence. Outside of that, they're going to have to get used to things being said that they don't like.
Well, I thought the woman who incited violence was on the platform at the Reform UK conference, either before or after the bloke claiming that King Charles got cancer because he took the COVID vaccine.
That's Dr. Malhotra you're referring to, and then Lucy Connolly, yeah, who appeared at a...
So surely shouting, set fire to a hotel full of refugees in the midst of a very febrile environment is up there with shouting fire in a crowd. Anyway, I digress. I just mentioned that because there is no way on earth that Reform UK would be currently threatening to call lawyers or the police over people exercising their free speech, is there, Henry?
Well, both, actually. If I take you to...
This is absurd. You're going to take up more space than we scheduled.
Which do you want to start with, lawyers or police? It's up to you.
Daddy or chips. Why are they calling the police?
They're calling the police with regards to, and this has been heavily publicised, Matt Goodwin, who's the candidate in the upcoming by-election, parliamentary by-election. Police are to take no action, it's been announced yesterday, after Reform UK reported Labour to the police over a misleading video attacking Matt
to the police?
Goodwin. To the police.
The actual police, not Sting and his mates.
No, not the band. They posted it, Labour, on their X feed, just hours sort of when he was announced as the candidate, and they reported to the police. He said, Mr. Goodwin, it was selectively edited. In reality, he was criticising the Tories. Important to say, the actual clip was, he was talking about Manchester. He says that was in the context of being at a former Conservative conference, but nonetheless, the bottom line is that he made a formal complaint to Greater Manchester Police.
The police? What crime did he think had been committed?
Well, they say no further action, but it was the Section 106 of the Representation of the People's Act.
So the Party of Free Speech literally called the police over an electioneering moment in which they were not very specific about why and when he was talking about Manchester when he was actually talking about Manchester.
And now Greater Manchester Police have dropped, I'll take no action, I should say, over that report.
And the lawyers, why are they threatening, or why have they called in lawyers over people saying things or using what I believe Reform supporters like to describe as hurty words?
This is, this is referring to Suella Braverman, who wants a public apology from Kemi Badenoch by 4 p.m. today.
TikTok.
It's fast approaching that deadline. This is all with regards to when she defected, at the event I was at, the Veterans for Reform event, and came onto the stage. A Conservative statement that was then amended and said it was put out in error. The original statement said they had done all they could to look after Suella's mental health, but it was clear she was very unhappy. Suella Braverman, understandably, was not happy with that, but has now threatened to sue Kemi Badenoch and the Conservative Party if they don't reach that 4 p.m. deadline in which to apologise for the first draft of that statement.
I suppose they could apologise, but if they don't, what do you think? It's not for you to say. I'm just wondering what the win is. Because all of the people who, I suppose they're not the most honest or unhypocritical of people, but they think you should be allowed to call for completely innocent people to be burnt to death in their beds, but that you shouldn't be able to make a very off-colour comment about the mental health of a politician. That's one for calling in the lawyers, saying that someone was talking about Manchester, but in a different way from the way was implied they were talking about Manchester, is grounds for calling the police. But calling for completely innocent people to be burnt to death in their beds in the middle of riots or on the brink of race riots, Farage riots, in which people were actually being targeted and hotels were actually being set on fire, that is such honourable behaviour that it gets you invited onto the stage at the party conference where you can have a few canapes with a bloke who thinks the king got cancer as a consequence of taking the COVID-19 vaccine. Have I got this right?
That is an interpretation of it, certainly. And the 4 p.m. deadline today is, as you say, TikTok for Kemi Badenoch to either respond to that. I'm not entirely sure whether they will dignify it with a response or whether they will put out some sort of statement.
I tell you what, it's not the bloke, as I get confused. Do you remember when Jo Brand was on a comedy programme and she made a joke on a comedy programme about throwing battery acid at Nigel Farage after someone had thrown a milkshake at him, and said on the comedy programme, obviously she didn't mean it, and obviously this being a comedy programme, this was a joke. Did he call the police then, or did he want to call the police then as well? Police for jokes, the police for mentions of Manchester that are slightly different from what the original Manchester mention of Manchester meant, and call the lawyers for casting aspersions on Suella Braverman's mental health.
If you're asking with regards to the Joe Brand incident, yeah. He certainly did at the time say that it was a police matter and that he was looking into pursuing that.
Well, I said you were going to take up more time than we scheduled for because I had no idea that when I asked you all of these questions, you were going to answer yes. It's 12:02.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, an asylum seeker has been jailed for at least 29 years for murdering a woman at a train station in the West Midlands. Sudanese national Deng Majek stabbed Rhiannon White multiple times in Walsall in October 2023. Majek, who arrived in the UK on a small boat less than 3 months before the attack, was living at the hotel where Miss White worked. In his sentencing remarks, Judge Mr. Justice Sewell says Majek gave no explanation for the attack.
You continue to deny that you were the assailant. The court is thus left with no explanation of what possessed you to murder a member of the hotel's staff who, together with her colleagues, had been serving and helping you and your fellow residents.
A review has found no evidence of unusually higher rates of childhood cancer in Corby in Northamptonshire. The local council has been looking into local families' concerns of a potential link with the historic dumping of toxic waste in the town. The authority says its findings have been reviewed by independent health experts. Two men have been arrested as part of an ongoing investigation into thousands of tons of waste dumped in Oxfordshire. The pair have been questioned on suspicion of environmental and money laundering offences. The mountain of rubbish was first discovered near Kidlington last summer. Ministers are playing down Donald Trump's claim that it's dangerous for the UK to do business with China. Sir Keir Starmer's in Shanghai on the final day of his visit to China, pushing for stronger economic ties. Deals on free visa travel and whiskey tariffs have been agreed. The Liberal Democrat leader, Sir Ed Davey, has told LBC that he rejects Mr. Trump's comments.
Donald Trump is just a hypocrite. He's going to Beijing himself in a few weeks' time, and the person who's most dangerous to trade in our world and security is Donald Trump himself. What do I think about Starmer's visit? Listen, you have to talk to the Chinese. I just wish he was doing it from a stronger point of view. If we had a trade deal with Europe, as Liberal Democrats have argued, a customs union, he'd go to Beijing with a much stronger hand.
And millions of low-income families will continue to receive the Warm Home discount for the rest of the decade. The government has agreed to extend the £150 off energy bills every winter until 2031. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 37 points at 10,209. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with patchy rain and hill snow in the north. Heavy rain and strong winds for the south and west, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan, gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payment. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Six minutes after 12 is the time. I haven't caught up with Sebastian Lai for a while. In fact, last time we caught up with him was here, but he must be really hoping against hope that things are going to change. For his dad, Jimmy Lai, currently imprisoned by the Chinese regime in Hong Kong. Chinese sanctions against, this is some breaking news for you, Chinese sanctions against British MPs and peers have been lifted following Sir Keir Starmer's talks with Xi Jinping. Although many of the parliamentaries affected by those sanctions have warned that they should not be used as a bargaining chip in talks with Beijing. But, you know, again, if you are prioritizing pragmatism over all else, then this counts as progress and a softening of relations between Beijing and London, Beijing and Westminster. I'm going to take a bit of a turn now. I'm going to do something rather different. I've taken two calls this week that are really going to stay with me. One of the great consolations of having been in the same job for a surprisingly long time is that I still feel that we are some days breaching new territory. The podcast has just gone up by 30% month on month, would you believe? The James O'Brien Daily podcast, the sort of hour-long... That's kind of what I mean in statistical terms. I generally don't open those emails, but for some reason I opened that one and I discovered Daniel had sent me a message saying we went up 30% January on December, presumably because, well, obviously because of all the Donald Trump coverage. There was a wonderful thing, I don't know if you saw it. I went home last Friday and I was thinking to myself, do you think we did too much Trump this week? Eleanor and I had a chat about it. We're both fairly confident we hadn't done too much Trump. But you sort of think, we've done, basically, we did Mystery Hour. We did PMQs, did we, last week? Yeah, we did PMQs and Mystery Hour. So that is 15 takeaway to 13 hours. And then we did 40 minutes on Beckham. So take away that. So that's 12 hours, give or take, that we did on Trump. And then, one of the rather good, I think More in Common, a rather good polling company, did one of those mind maps about what people were most engaged with in terms of the news agenda. And it was uncanny because by far the biggest word was Trump, followed closely by Greenland, which is why we were talking so much about Trump most of the time. And then the third thing, although it was tiny, so it went Trump in enormous letters, it went Greenland in almost enormous letters, and then in tiny letters, the Beckhams. So it was as if our editorial instincts for once were entirely in tune with the English, with the British people. Albeit that there are a lot of people in America downloading the podcast. So one of the things why, one of the reasons why I still love this job so much is that things still happen that knock me back, and we're still reaching parts and new things. Two calls this week. It could be that the entire country was listening to us, which is why they were so in tune with our priorities, but that is still statistically unlikely. Two calls this week that will stay, maybe more, but two off the top of my head that will stay with me forever. One for very good reasons and one for less good reasons. One has been on today's show, no prizes for guessing which call it was. Absolutely illuminating, completely fascinating illustration of what it is like to be brainwashed by a party machine. But the other was Helen in Preston, the daughter of a dustbin man, told that she could never be a doctor. I love that story, and I am, I've sent a clip of that to my publisher in the hope that we can play some sort of role in getting her story onto a much bigger and wider stage. But I was thinking about that, yesterday, and that conversation we were having about aspiration and, that why white working class boys in particular were falling behind at school, which is not a mystery at all. It is because their parents are not, and through no fault of their own, but their parents do not value education. And they should. But, you know, if they're living on a diet of Rupert Murdoch-flavoured media, they're being told that teachers are the enemy and that schools are woke and that books are... One caller, of course, towards the end of that hour used a word that he's on Ofcom's offensive list to describe what his parents called him when he revealed that he had an enthusiasm for books. And Helen described herself as a real-life Matilda. That was one of my favourite conversations in ages. I'd never asked you that question before. What's it like to grow up in a house where mum and dad or mum or dad do not value education? And it is sadly more likely to happen in a white working class household than it is in any... Dad's too busy out hanging up flags on the local roundabout, possibly. But it is more likely to happen... Actually, that's not fair, is it? That's probably a sort of middle-class businessman who used to be a member of the Tory party and has got an industrial estate full of cherry pickers. But it was fascinating to me because we'd never looked at it that way before. And then I opened the news last night to read that 459,288 school holiday fines were issued in England alone last year, according to the latest figures. It's a rise only of 4%, but 93% of all fines issued for unauthorised school absence. And I just wondered to myself what the difference was. I just wondered to myself whether or not we had been unwittingly or unintentionally a little bit snobby. Because if you were to deride white working class parents for not properly valuing the education that their children are receiving, what would you say about the middle class parents who are taking their children on holiday during term time because they're not prepared to go on the only holidays that they can afford to go on during school holidays? Doesn't that teach children that their education is not important? I don't know why I'm saying that in an interrogatory tone. It does, doesn't it? It just does. I take my children's education very, very seriously. Yeah. But, you know, we can't afford to go to Barbados during the school holidays, so we're going to go during term time. Oh, okay. Are you the kind of person, when we're talking about child benefits or the children's allowance, are you the kind of person that says you shouldn't have children if you can't afford them? Yes, I am. Well, then you shouldn't be going on those holidays if you can't afford. Well, I can afford. No, you can't. Well, I can if I take my children out of school. Yeah, but that does two things. Number one, it flies in the face of the relationship between affordability and income. And it also teaches your children that sunbathing is more important than maths. Does it? Does it? That's the question. Because I know I say this quite often, but there are two me's. There is pre-therapy me and post-therapy me. And some days, very, very briefly, I miss pre-therapy. Because I used to do this topic in such a, what would the word be? In such a tub-thumping kind of way. You can tell the professional opinioners who would really benefit from a little bit of therapy, because they kind of, if their opinion is flimsy, they just shout louder. So if your opinion, or they stick their fingers in their ears and go, la, 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 la. If you actually learn the ability of analysing your own thoughts and opinions, you find yourself really struggling sometimes to scale the dizzy heights of condescension and arrogance that you used to inhabit. Laying down the law when you don't really have the ability to explain why you're right, but you're damn certain that you are. And pre-therapy me would have gone in so hard now on parents taking their children away during term time that you would have been provoked to call me as a consequence of my own obnoxiousness. I would have been deliberately obnoxious. And if you'd given me a truth drug, I would have meant it. It would not have said that I was lying. No, he really means this. He thinks you're an absolute scumbag if you're taking your children out of school during term time because you can't afford the holiday you want to go on if you go on it during the holiday time. I still believe that you're doing something really bad, but I don't want to make it personal anymore. I don't want to call you a scumbag. I just wonder whether you can persuade me that you're not doing something really bad. If you're taking your children out of school during term time to go on holiday, if you're one of the 459,288 families who are doing that, you are teaching them that their education is not as important as your holiday. You just are. You can pretend, oh, no, we went to the Colosseum. Yeah, whatever. The Colosseum doesn't shut during the actual holidays. Go for 3 days when you can afford to go. And this now makes me sound even worse because, in a way, I'm ignoring my own privilege. I can afford to go on most of the holidays that I want to go on during the school holidays. And, in fact, my kids are now of an age where I don't even have to. I can go away the rest of the time. But it's just true, isn't it? And the reason why I use the word snobbish is because that analysis of working class parents is unchallengeable. You can't argue that a kid in a house where the parents really value education, have the wherewithal and the desire to see their children thrive, that child is going to do better than a child in a house where the parents don't give two hoots. That's just true. And tragically, our demographics, and this hasn't always been the case, but our sort of post-Murdoch demographics are, you're more likely to think education is a waste of time and you're more likely to hate teachers if you are a kind of sun-reading working-class parent. And that is going to have consequences for your kids. But for the middle-class parents who take their children out of school during term time, I think they're just as bad in many ways. I think that's just as sad. And in many ways, it's worse, actually. It is just worse, because you know better. Nobody has gaslit or groomed you into believing that you should go on holiday rather than leave your children in school. You're doing it out of pure selfishness and greed. You're not doing it because you've somehow been persuaded by circumstances and events that education is a waste of time. You actually think education is important. You have high hopes for your kids. But this is such a self-obsessed culture that we inhabit now. Your holiday, the caliber of your holiday is more important than the quality of your children's education. You can deny it to yourself until the sun goes down. But it's true. 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. How bad is it? Are you prepared to admit that you? Just tell me why this doesn't prove that you care more about getting a suntan than you do about your children's education. Just prove to me that it doesn't, because it does. Unless you can prove to me that it doesn't. You care more about getting a suntan. You care more about being able to put fancy photos up on Facebook than you do about your children's education. Well, where can you afford to go to? Oh, I don't want to go there. Why not? Well, I can't put the fancy photos up on Facebook. Just how can anybody argue that taking your children out of school during term time does not teach your children that putting fancy photos up on Facebook and getting a nice suntan, or whatever it may be, is incredibly detrimental to your children? It just is, right? But post-therapy me has this little seed of doubt in my mind that maybe it's a bit more complicated. Maybe it's a bit more nuanced than that. Maybe I'm being a little bit unfair. Maybe of the 459,288, only 288 have got strong arguments. But, well, let's find out. There is nothing more important than your children's education. That is neither a middle class, an upper class, or a lower class opinion. It's a matter of fact. There's nothing you can give your children that's more valuable than love, followed by education. So why on earth would you be prioritising a holiday over education unless you're teaching them that education doesn't really matter that much? Not when there's fancy photos to be stuck up on Facebook. It's 1219. You know the number, but I'll remind you anyway. 0345 6060973.
This is LBC.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Cost and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Attention dogs, this is not a drill. If your dinner comes in dodgy brown balls or smells suspicious, at best, you deserve to know this. Butternut Box makes fresh dog food with ingredients you'd find in your human's fridge. In fact, some humans have even tasted it. For quality control, obviously. Anyway, let's hope your human was listening. Butternut Box, fresh food, happy dogs. Try Butternut Box today and get 25% off your first two boxes. Offer available online in the UK and Ireland to first-time customers only.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers. Your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
It took me less than 30 seconds to request my repeat prescription on the NHS app.
That's quicker than making this brew.
And I saved time by not ringing the GP practice.
Win.
Plus, with notifications turned on, I know as soon as I get a new message.
Big win.
So there's more time for this tea break.
So did you go to that restaurant?
I did. It was so
good. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Request repeat prescriptions and turn on notifications to never miss a message. Tap the NHS app.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
21 minutes after 12 is the time. Hey, listen, it's not my problem. If you think that a nice holiday is more important than your children's education, that's fine. But let's not pretend that you're not doing your children harm. There you go. That's what an obnoxious radio host would say. I've still got it there somewhere inside me. I just want to do something a bit different now. I did it after lockdown. I don't know if I've done it since, because during lockdown, we were broadcasting from some of the strangest places. I was broadcasting from the bottom of my garden. Did I tell you that we got complaints about a weird whistling noise? And we were pulling things apart and trying to work, and it was next door's kids on the trampoline, bouncing up and down like a little squeak, squeak, squeak. People could hear birdsong in the background, because it obviously wasn't a soundproof room. But what was extraordinary about that was that the engineering department here at LBC set up my shed to broadcast absolutely first-class radio to you 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And you could see me as well, not long after we started. We got the vision up. There was no one there. It was just me sitting in a shed. It's one of the most surreal experiences of my life. But we do not thank the engineers at Global Radio anywhere near enough, because without them, there'd be nothing. There'd be absolutely nothing. So I mentioned to you yesterday that all my screens had gone blank in the studio. This time yesterday, I mentioned to you that all my screens had gone blank in the studio. Did I mention that there'd also been a loud bang? Did I mention that? No. There was also a loud bang. And I was quite scared, obviously. Not for my safety, because I would carry on broadcasting through hell and high water, because such is my commitment to you. But what's extraordinary, so they shipped me out of the studio upstairs to another little studio that we've got, and then these guys move in, and they are like a cross between MacGyver and the mice in Bagpuss. So you remember the mice in Bagpuss? We will fix it. We will mend it. And MacGyver, who could build a machine gun out of rubber bands and golf balls. And these guys pile into it and they start tearing things out. And what's she doing? And then we're back on in 10 minutes. Everything's fine again by the time Sheila's ready to do her show. I mean, just extraordinary. And you remember, okay, three things. They're a cross between MacGyver, the mice in Bagpuss, and a Formula One pit team. That's what they're like. So where would Lewis Hamilton be if he pulled into the pits and there was no one there to change his wheels? I'm Lewis Hamilton in this story. So I mean to do it often, and I don't do it anywhere often enough. And they weren't all on duty yesterday, or at least they weren't all in this studio yesterday. But I just thought I'd take a moment today to thank John and Alex and Mary and Jessica and Steve and Kai and Herjie and Simon and Robin, who is celebrating his 20th anniversary. He's been here almost as long as me. At Global today, for everything they do, every single day, not just when, through no fault of mine, I checked with Robin earlier, through no fault of mine, the studio that you're in goes a bit, well, there's a loud bang and all the screens go blank, and they just fix it. Every day we're on air, it's all down to them. Everything that we do reaches you because of them, and they are the most unsung heroes in this building, and not today. It's 25 minutes after 12. Sally's in Bristol to steer us back to the phone-in that we couldn't have without John, Alex, Mary, Jessica, Steve, Kai, Herjie, Simon and Robin. What would you like to say, Sally?
Hello. Hiya. So, I have taken my son out of school, in primary school. Okay? I know, what a terrible parent. And I'll tell you why. Now, I really, really value education, okay?
Oh, no. Let's just qualify that. You value education. You don't really, really value education, because how many reallys would we use for someone who would never take their child out of school during term time?
Well, bravo then. But I... the reason that I did it is because I was giving him value on that last day of term that I took him out on in the first instance, because it was toy day, and all they did was have a party and they ate a load of...
But that's the best day of term.
And they learnt nothing.
But that's the best day of term from his point of view.
Hang on, no. I didn't take him out of school for the first day of term. I always made sure he was there for the first day.
No, I said the best day. That's the best day of school. The home clothes day, the eating biscuits day. That's all part of the educational process.
Oh, they can do that, the parties. And there was copious parties, I can assure you. So, when I took him out of school, I did it because I'm a single parent. And also, I was teaching him whilst we were away.
Yeah,
he was learning.
Teaching him that school's not important.
He was doing Duolingo. He was speaking to waitresses and learning how to ask for the bill. And I made sure
But you can do that if you went on holiday when you're allowed to go on holiday.
Yeah, but when he's five, he's a sponge and he's learning languages.
But he was still five the next day when you were allowed to go on holiday.
And we continued and we invested. I was compounding his education.
But none of these things are unique to going on holiday when you're not allowed to go on holiday. You can do them all when you can go on holiday. So why did you have to take him out of school?
Because it saves me about £1,000. And I'm a single parent. And when you've got holidays,
heartstrings. My heartstrings will be untugged this hour.
It's a fact. It's not an emotional sale.
Well, you could have gone on a cheaper holiday, I'm afraid.
Do you know what? Where?
What? Well, you could have stayed in a caravan instead of a jeep.
That's probably more expensive. It's definitely I didn't stay not in a jeep.
What did you stay
in? I didn't stay in a jeep. I stayed in a hotel.
And a hotel? A hotel?
Right, you do a cost analysis for a caravan in Cornwall to a hotel. And I'm not talking five star, like tourist boutique. I'm talking average.
Yeah, but the caravan around the corner cheaper. Would have been cheaper. You could have stayed on a caravan site around the corner a bit cheaper. What are they called? Pardon?
Caravan site in Bristol.
You went on holiday to Bristol?
No, you're saying I could stay in a caravan around the corner. There's
from
no
where your hotel was, not from where you are now, Sally. Do keep up.
It would have been... sorry, it must be this bad line. It was cheaper, let me
it
assure
wasn't.
You.
So where was the hotel? What country were you in?
We were in Madeira.
Okay.
And it was we missed, the penultimate day of the school holiday.
And how much were the fines? How much were the fines?
I didn't get fined then.
Oh, okay. Have you ever been fined?
I have.
So you keep doing it? You're a recidivist?
No, I'm not a serial offender.
You are a serial offender. How many times have you done it?
I did it three times, once when he was five in reception. We went to Cornwall then, James, you'll be pleased to hear.
Just when I say caravan, what a static caravan? I don't mean foreign.
Static.
The last family holiday we all went on when I was a kid was to Benidorm in Brittany, and we stayed in a static caravan, and it was during the school holidays. Although there's a bit of... unfair advantage and privilege here, isn't there? Because I was at private school, which meant that our holidays were different from state schools anyway, and sometimes they would fall in the category where the prices hadn't actually gone up. You know I'm right, Sally. I mean, I'm enjoying our conversation, and I bet we're both relieved that this is post-therapy me, so I'm not being particularly obnoxious. But you've taught the lad that holidays are more important than school.
I taught him about culture.
Also taught him that holidays are more important than school.
I didn't.
You did.
I didn't.
You
I did. Taught him that we are going to save £1,000 by taking one day off of school when you be eating processed food and having a party with all your mates and having toy days.
Yeah.
When you have loads of those already.
But not on three occasions. The other two
luckily,
occasions.
They were financed by the wealthy parents.
Thank you very much, Sally, who teaches her children that, who doesn't. You see, this is what I mean. Maybe there is a little bit of nuance there. But here's the problem, okay? If everybody did that, what happens on that day? This is what teachers have to deal with. They have to work upon the principle that something is wrong, because if everybody did it, the impact would be huge. So then the day would be earlier. The previous day would be the last day of term, because nobody's going to turn up on the next day. So on the previous day, they'd be doing the biscuits and the videos. The beauty of this, not immediately a philosophical issue, few things are. This is absolutely intrinsic to the notion of community. If I do it, it will be okay, because it's only me doing it. And you can make that argument, and Sally made it very, very well. But that argument collapses the minute you say, what if everybody else did it? So the only defence for this behaviour is, well, I'm special. It's 12:30. Amelia Cox has your headlines.
An asylum seeker who murdered a woman who worked at the hotel where he was being housed has been jailed for at least 29 years. Sudanese national Deng Majek stabbed Rhiannon White at Walsall train station in the West Midlands in October 2023. China has lifted sanctions against several British MPs and peers following talks between Keir Starmer and Xi Jinping. But those involved, including former Conservative leader Sir Ian Duncan-Smith, says they should not be used as bargaining chips. And two men have been arrested as part of an investigation into thousands of tons of waste dumped in Oxfordshire. They've been questioned on suspicion of environmental and money laundering offences. LBC weather, cloudy for most with patchy rain and hill snow in the north. Heavy rain and strong winds in the southwest, a few bright spells for Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, and my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours, I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulgutthealth.com/radio.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead.
I can see why they're into it.
Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Cost and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
12:34 is the time. There's a bit of generational shift going on here. Most people of my parents' generation would not countenance for a moment taking their children out of school to go on holiday. The relationship between school and parents has changed. That cartoon that I mentioned the other day that I never remember, someone sent to me just after the show, as always happens. And it's essentially two parents' evenings. And it's not behaviour, it's grades. So it's parents' evening and the child has got bad grades. And if you were to be going back to my school days, the parents would be berating the child for having bad grades. Fast forward to the modern world and on parents' evening, the child has bad grades, the same grades, and the parents are berating the teacher for the child having bad grades. And listen, as with many extremes, the truth is probably somewhere between the two. In that if a child has bad grades, some responsibility probably does lie with the teacher sometimes. But it speaks of a shift in perspective, doesn't it? And it's the same shift that explains why parents who think in their heart of hearts that they care deeply about their children's education will go on a holiday, take their child out of school, suck up the fine because they can't afford the same holiday during the actual holidays. And that teaches the children that education is less important than it is to the children in families who would never do that. That's just a matter of fact. And listen, I'm aware of all the things that the holiday companies are to blame and some people can't take time off. And think about the, you know, what about teachers? How are teachers ever going to be able to take their children on holiday during term time? It's just the way it used to be. I'm not a big fan of authoritarianism, or at least I think I'm not, until we talk about authoritarian things and I find myself strangely enthusiastic about some of them. But it's just true. There's two children in the same class. One has got parents who would never dream of skipping school to go to Lanzarote. One has got parents who do skip school to go to Lanzarote. Who's getting the better messages about education, regardless of how much Duolingo they do while they're in Lanzarote? You know I'm right. Andrew is in Norwich. Andrew, what would you like to say?
Just from the point of view of being in the military, being able to choose.
I can't. I'm not arguing with you. I'm not arguing with you. You can't do that. You can't pull the military card. Not on this program. Where we revere the military. We get dewy-eyed about the military. And you can do what you want, mate. Take the whole year off.
If only the school saw it that way.
So you get gypped, do you? You have trouble?
Yeah. So it's supposed to be Armed Forces Covenant that's supposed to cover us. So if I give you an example, I've only ever taken the children out of school twice, and I've been in the military for 23 years, so I've been in the whole time that they've been alive. The last time was 3 years ago, and I got deployed short notice, and I was going to be deployed over Christmas and Easter and potentially up to summer holidays.
Yeah.
So I had to cancel plans that we were, well, I didn't cancel them. They went without me. We had holiday booked during term time, during school holidays.
Yeah.
So we booked the last minute 5 days away, the week before I went away. And that was down as unauthorized absence by the school. And I spoke to them about the Armed Forces Covenant and tried to explain that, you know, I'm now being deployed. I'm not even going to be contactable for X amount of months. This is our opportunity now.
This is outrageous. Yeah. Thank God I'm not obnoxious radio presenter I used to be, because I'd be guzzling humble pie now.
And they just weren't interested. The only reference they gave me...
What was that?
The only reference they gave me was that they've got...
Are you sure that's not a truth alarm in the background, and that you're secretly a plumber? You're actually a plumber.
I got home last night, actually, funny enough. You make my journeys on the road a lot
more interesting. Thank you.
But yeah, they just referenced that they've got children at school whose parents are in the RAF.
Yeah.
They're based at an RAF base sort of just up the road. That's a little bit different to going undersea and on submarine for several months and not being contactable.
Every rule has exceptions. In fact, the exceptions prove the rules. And nobody in their right mind would defend or attack you for what you're describing. And in fact, I can accommodate this into my slightly arrogant worldview, because nobody else is going to be able to do the same. So you can say, well, what if everybody did it? And I would say, well, that's fine. If everybody who's been deployed on a submarine for months on end wants to take their children on holiday during term time, then the school will A, be able to cope with the lessons that have been missed and help the children catch up, and B, it's not going to leave a big enough gap in the classroom to be an actual problem. So you can have exceptions to the rule, and if submariners are not at the top of the list of exceptions, or any military being deployed for lengthy periods of time, then frankly I don't know who will be. To defend the school, and I'm sure you know this, the legislation or the regulations will not accommodate your reality, your existence, will they?
There is an Armed Forces Covenant that...
Tell me more about that, Andrew.
So they are supposed to actually support unauthorised absence in the event of being deployed. So not out of choice. You know, I can't just go, I'm going to book leave in these 2 weeks. I want to go away. But for instance, and I've provided documentation to them from my chain of command saying, you know, they can't obviously give too many details, but yes, been deployed. However, it ultimately comes down to what your local authority does in your area, who governs the schools.
And so you tried. They just didn't deliver on what they should have...
No, not at all.
Sorry.
I must admit, the primary school my son went to, I'd done this 3 years ago, were a little bit better. They put 1 day down as authorised and 4 days down as unauthorised, so it didn't reach the 5 day threshold.
Okay.
But the high school just would not entertain it at all. In fact, the deputy head teacher questioned the fact that I wasn't contactable when I was away. couldn't seem to understand that you don't get a brilliant signal when you're, you know, X amount of meters under the water somewhere else in the world. And the fact that as well, because this has come up very short notice. I say very short notice, I mean 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's pretty short.
Yeah. And I said, look at their attendance. Attendance has been superb. The previous time that I'd done it, they both took schoolwork away with them to do. That didn't happen last time because the schools just weren't playing ball at all. And the high school my son is currently at, I asked a question at a meeting a few months ago about their policy on turn time,
on
holiday
you,
under
really?
My circumstances.
Yeah.
Yes, specifically. And I got the same response of it would possibly be looked at on a case-to-case basis, but we generally don't support that. Someone then asked a question about having time off for religious holidays. And that, and I'm not saying this is wrong.
No, of course.
That was carte blanche, absolutely fine. And I'm sort of sitting there thinking, hang on a minute. You know,
Yeah. I'd be the same.
I'm not saying that they shouldn't have time.
No, I know you're not. You don't even need to qualify that, mate. Don't worry. I understand exactly what you're saying.
You know, a little bit of support would be nice.
The main difference being, Andrew, is that we can prove that your submarine exists. They can't prove that their God does.
That is very true.
Thank you very much. Yep. You can have that. Yes. I'm going to do something, all right? I'm going to do what is known in the trade as a reverse ferret on my previously very robust position as a consequence of your contribution. And at the end of my reverse ferret, I want you to give me marks out of 10.
Will do.
All right. So, other parents listening to this who think that they are entitled to take their children, how dare you compare yourself to military heroes? To soldiers and sailors, airmen and women who, in service of king and country, sacrifice family contact in some cases for months on end. And you think you should be able to avail yourself of the same rights and privileges because you can't afford your 3 weeks or your 2 weeks in Lanzarote during actual holiday time and you want to put fancy Facebook? You're as bad as Donald Trump when it comes to maligning our... How was that, Andrew? Was that okay?
A-star.
There we go. Thank you very much. And I mean it. You are absolutely not on the hook for any of the things that I'm talking about today, because you can have exceptions that prove rules. I said earlier, the parents who are doing this think that they're special, that they deserve special treatment, because if everybody did it, the system would collapse. Andrew is special, and therefore he deserves special treatment. And that is how you do a reverse ferret. And, of course, for the avoidance of doubt, I absolutely mean it. Aggie Chambray is here, presumably, because the aftermath, or it's still ongoing, he's still in Beijing, but the sanctions... It's a funny story, this, because they've lifted sanctions on British politicians who would probably already be complaining about the fact that sanctions have been lifted on them, or almost.
Pretty much, James. So Chinese sanctions against British MPs and peers have been lifted as part of, well, following a one-to-one meeting with Sir Keir Starmer and President Xi Jinping on his trip to China. And that includes people like Sir Ian Duncan Smith, of course, the former Conservative Party leader, former Security Minister Tom Tugendhat, Commons Deputy Speaker Nus Ghani, and a few others too. They all had sanctions put on them, well, partly because Britain sanctioned four Chinese officials and a state-run organisation in exchange for that. Then these politicians had sanctions put on them, which, apart from other things, meant they were unable to go to China. I think probably worth saying part of the reason that they had these sanctions in the first place was because they were so critical of China. So I don't think they would have wanted to go to China anyway. But they put out a preemptive statement when it sounded like this was about to happen, basically saying that the sanctions being lifted on them should not be used as a bargaining chip in talks with Beijing. Sir Ian Duncan Smith also said that he just didn't think this should be used as part of a deal, and also wanted to raise once again the human rights abuses in the Xinjiang province. But Sir Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, I think will use this, along with the other things that he has gained from this trip, as a sort of vindication for the fact that he visited when it has been highly criticised, the fact that he did visit in the first place. So he has said today this has been a cause of concern in Parliament and for parliamentarians for some time, and this is why I raised it on the visit.
President Xi said what that means is that all parliamentarians are free to travel to China. And that's something that couldn't have happened if we weren't here having the leader-to-leader exchange. It doesn't happen if you stick your head in the sand.
Now, we understand that Britain will not be lifting restrictions in exchange. I talked about those four Chinese officials who had been sanctioned. Those sanctions will not be lifted in exchange. But as I say, this comes out of that meeting that they had. We also know that Jimmy Lai, the 78-year-old British national who remains behind bars, that was raised, but no movement appears to have been made on his release. But we've also heard from Donald Trump overnight as well, who basically said that the idea that Starmer was there and trying to have this sort of economic reset was very dangerous for them to do that. Starmer has said today that if he was a parliamentarian, he would, of course, feel safe travelling to China, which, James, you may know, is slightly strange because he, along with the entire Number 10 delegation, have not taken their normal phones.
No.
They've taken burner phones. They haven't taken their normal laptops. So it's slightly strange that he's saying, of course, he'd feel completely completely safe when he and his all of his team basically haven't taken Norm phones, presumably because they don't feel entirely safe.
When is Donald Trump scheduled to visit Beijing?
April of this year. So that hasn't been confirmed yet, but he is, you know, he's obviously slagging off Keir Starmer.
Trump's going to Trump. Obviously, political editor Aragy Chambray, thank you. It's an interesting story, that, and I don't know. As I mentioned a moment ago, I haven't caught up with Sebastian very recently, so I don't know whether there will be slightly more hope in the Lai household about possible movement on the plight of his dad, Jimmy, than there was before this trip took place. But I think we can all agree that we hope so. Good Lord, is that the time? It's 12:47.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Should we ever accept male asylum seekers from countries where the rape and killing of women is massively on the increase? And should the government have ever considered ending free entry into museums and galleries?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down.
Not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 10 minutes to 1, and we almost forgot to celebrate Dick Littlejohn Day. This is a Daily Mail columnist who you're probably unaware of, actually, apart from the attention that we pay to him on this programme. But he's a very important man, very big opinions. He often writes great pieces about how awful Britain is from his holiday home in America. And he's a big, big fan of Donald Trump. In fact, he wrote recently that he'd much rather Donald Trump was in charge of the United Kingdom than the Prime Minister that the British electorate actually chose to put into Downing Street. So we're just wondering about what he's got to say about the maligning of our military, or the murder of a nurse on the streets of Minneapolis, or the denigration, of course, of the nurse's memory, or the persistent and frequent lies that Donald Trump tells about everything, up to and including our country and our democratically elected government. So today's column is, to be fair to the guy, dedicated to the case of Alex Pretty and the unfolding horrors of that state-sanctioned murder. And this is what he has to say. Until the advent of blanket 20-mile-per-hour speed limits, actor Idris Elba is the latest high-profile victim. So what are you going to write about today, Dick? Are you going to write about Donald Trump, or do you think you're going to write about Beijing? I'm going to write about speed limits and recycling. But only last week you were waxing lyrical about how brilliant Donald Trump is and why you want him, not Keir Starmer. never mind the insults to American military. He's moved on to the British military now. He's telling lies about a man who was murdered in cold blood and broad daylight on the streets of Minneapolis. Surely you've got something to say about him. No, I probably got more letters and emails about Britain's deranged rubbish and recycling regime than anything else. Which tells you an awful lot about the kind of people who send letters and emails to Dick Littlejohn. So I'm afraid it's going to be another week that we'll have to wait for to see him explain to us why we should actually be celebrating the murder of Alex Pretty, because thank God that Keir Starmer isn't in charge, and if only Donald Trump was in charge over here. It is. Can we get a jingle for Dick Littlejohn Day? Would that be all right, do you think? Can we put some? I'll sing one myself, maybe. Like Dennis Waterman in Little Britain, that might be fun. Maybe not. I'll leave that one to the professionals. Sharon's in Brentwood. Sharon, back to school. What would you like to say?
First of all, I'd like to say this is my first time calling you.
Right, I'm just going to calm down a bit because I don't want to frighten you.
You won't frighten me, darling. I'm just extremely nervous.
Don't be nervous. It's only me.
I know. I've been listening to you for too many years. This is something, and I'm going to get emotional. It's passion.
Okay.
Right.
Yes.
My story goes back about 24 years, and it was about the time when they first started saying about finding parents. Now, the story of my two boys is 5 and 7. Now, I'm a single mum, and their dad walked out on them when they were 18 months and the three.
Gosh.
Now, doesn't matter, because they are the most amazing, successful young men, but it's called neurodivergent today.
Got it.
They were both acutely dyslexic and ADHD. At 5 and 7 years old, I was told by the school the best I could ever hope for my children to achieve was average.
Yeah.
And I was never going to have that. So, and I'm going to call it invest, because obviously I had to take out, borrow money. I don't call that debt, I call that investment. And I took my boys out. The school didn't like it, but I took them out 3 mornings a week to go to a specialist dyslexia tutor.
Good Lord.
Because at 7 years old, the school had nothing to offer. And they still don't today. But at 7 years old...
It's a lot better than it used to be, but my goodness me, you were ahead of the game.
So you... I'm a father's child. And my dad was acutely dyslexic.
Wow.
But I took them out of school. The state went mad. But I thought, if my kids are only going to be average, it will be because of my decisions, not because I'm just a sheep going along with the crowd. They never, ever had a holiday because I couldn't afford it. And then when they got to 8 and 10, my mum and dad said, you know, you really should do something. They really need to go away because the amount of extra homework they had from the Dyslexia Institute was off the Richter scale.
Wow.
So we sat down with them and asked what they wanted to do. And they wanted to learn to ski. I'd never skied in my life. Absolutely horrified I was.
Where did they get that idea from?
Well, they're highly educated.
I know, I love
it. They used to watch Ski Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And they loved it when it snowed.
Love it.
So, the only way it could be afforded was at the end of January, which is the cheapest week. I did that every single year. Both my kids are expert skiers. But when I listen, it's not the same yardstick for all, James.
No, you're absolutely right.
Okay, and look,
I'm so glad I pointed that out, Sharon.
I can remember listening to you where I could have rung up, put my hands down the phone and pulled your tongue out years ago.
You could have wrung my neck.
Well, more than that.
Thank you.
But I am just, I mean, I've listened to you.
You're so right.
I've listened to you and how you developed you've changed my mind on so many things. You've actually opened my mind up. But I just needed, I get that I would say the majority of parents do it for the reasons you've said, but there are some of us out there that have not sacrificed, we've invested everything to make sure that they get something at the end of it. Now, they came out of school...
But you're the opposite of what I was describing. You're the opposite of a parent that doesn't value education enough. You saw exactly what it would give to your boys.
It was all I could give them.
And you moved mountains, if you pardon the skiing analogy. You moved mountains to make sure that they got it, didn't you?
Absolutely.
Tell me how well they're doing now. Tell me a bit about it. I'll play the full disclosure clip on Monday. I'm not playing it today. I'll tell you who it is in a minute. But tell me how well the boys are doing now.
Right. When they came out of the GCSEs, they got 5 A stars, 4 A's and 1 B.
Nothing average about that.
Tell me, but if I had gone along with what I was told, and if I was a sheep and just gave over the responsibility to the people that think they know, my kids would just be... And this isn't meant in any way derogatory, because I'm going to tell you what they worked like dogs, and no matter their hunger for education, they loved it so much. From when, first of all, they hated it; it was so painful.
Yeah.
When you get them the right help, and this help, having been did it for 12 years, this help, if they just altered it in schools for all children. The kids that are dyslexic and with the neuro, everybody would benefit from this.
Well, exactly. And next time we have that conversation, and next time I make that point, I'll have you and your sons in the back of my mind, Sharon.
Because, well, honestly, they then got 2 A stars and an A at A level. At history, English lit, and economics. So tough. Tough, hardcore subject.
Yeah, very
wordy.
And
they both got first-class degrees. One is now a top executive headhunter.
Wow.
And the other one is really high up. Don't ask me, because I don't understand it.
Don't ask me.
Political insurance risk, whatever that is, I've no idea.
And do they still go skiing?
Yes.
Look at that. Hey, that is one of my favourite calls.
Honestly, I just had to let you know because I felt you're so fantastic. Passionate
you're
about
an absolute superstar.
And seriously. You know, they are incredible.
Well, so are you. I can see where they get it from. Seriously. Thank you, Sharon. What a beautiful end to the week. And thanks for chucking in a few kind words about me as well. That is something that will stay with me too. Well, there you go. Good job I wasn't being on my high horse about children being taken out of school during time to go on holidays. Otherwise, this would all be very embarrassing. That's it from me for another week. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. You can stay up to date there with all the latest news and opinions and listen to a range of podcasts, including Full Disclosure, which features the absolutely magnificent actor and brilliant bloke, Jonathan Pryce, star of everything from the Crown to Brazil to, well, you name it, he's in Game of Thrones recently, he's in Slow Horses, he's in loads and loads of... You know Jonathan Pryce. Anyway, I'll give you a proper plug for that on Monday. Download the official LBC app for free. Tom Sorbick will be with you at 4, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much indeed, James. Deng Magic came to Britain in a small boat from a country that's seen a massive increase, a really massive increase in brutal and often sexual violence against women and girls, Sudan. Sudan won't be alone in that description either. Magic arrived and 3 months later he murdered Rhiannon White, a mother of one. So what should we do about people who arrive from countries like Sudan, where we know this is the case? Doesn't mean every Sudanese man is like Deng Magic, but what do we do in case one of them is? We're going to talk too with Aggie Chambray about free entry to museums and galleries. Can the government really say it supports education if it even considered for a second ending that facility?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, a Sudanese asylum seeker has been jailed for at least 29 years for the murder of a woman who worked at the hotel where he was being housed. Deng Majek is believed to have entered the UK in a small boat less than 3 months before carrying out the attack on Rhiannon White. The 27-year-old was stabbed 23 times at Bescot Stadium train station in the West Midlands in October 2024. Rhiannon's mother, Siobhan, said at the time he was convicted that she wants him to face justice here.
I'm not against asylum seekers, whatever, but he's taken my daughter away. He doesn't deserve to be sent back to his own country. Serve his time here every day of his life.
Chinese sanctions against several British MPs and peers have been lifted following talks between Sir Keir Starmer and Xi Jinping. But the parliamentarians involved say they should not be used as bargaining chips. They include former Conservative leader Sir Ian Duncan-Smith. A review of historic dumping of toxic waste in a town in Northamptonshire has found no evidence of unusually higher rates of childhood cancer. Corby's local council has been looking into concerns raised by families living nearby. Its findings were reviewed by independent health experts. The Conservatives are calling for a bus driver to get his job back after he was sacked for chasing down a robber. Mark Heher knocked the man out after a passenger's necklace was stolen in London in 2024. Police found he used proportionate force, but bus firm Metroline decided he'd failed to protect customers. Mr. Heher called LBC yesterday to explain his version of events.
After about 200 metres, I caught the guy. We had a bit of a scuffle. He wasn't getting away, so he handed me back the necklace. I walked back to the bus. I handed the necklace to the girl, and someone said, "He's coming behind you." So I turned around, and the girl is clearly on CCTV, putting her hand up. She's distressed. She's telling him to go away. I stood between them because she's nervous. And next thing, the guy, as is clearly shown on CCTV, went to throw a left punch, and I met him with a right punch.
An LBC understands the Treasury considered plans to end free entry to museums and galleries for international visitors. The proposals were weighed up as part of spending cuts in November's budget. The idea was eventually scrapped after pushback from culture ministers. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 50 points at 10,222. The pound buys $1.37 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most with patchy rain and hill snow in the north, heavy rain and strong winds in the southwest, a few bright spells for Northern Ireland, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search "Don't Get Caught Out".
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Just a warning, really, that some of the detail that we're going to talk about this hour, it will be disturbing, and I wouldn't want to upset anybody, so it will detail a description of violence. I'll also be talking about rape this hour as well, but just a health warning over that. This is all connected to the sentencing, the conviction of Deng Chol Majek, a man who came here from Sudan originally, where there is an absolutely brutal civil war going on, a conflict going on there, and brutal is an understatement for what's going on there. And he arguably is a victim of that conflict. But very quickly, within 3 weeks of 3 months, I should say, of coming to this country in a boat across the channel, he murdered Rhiannon White, and he has been sentenced for that today. And the judge left no stone unturned in describing the brutality of it. We'll hear some of that detail from Luke Shanahan in just a moment, LBC's Midlands reporter who was at Coventry Crown Court for the sentencing. The question I want to put to you is a delicate one, really, because I don't want to suggest in my question that any man who flees Sudan and seeks asylum in this country is a Deng Magic. I don't want to suggest that. I mean, sheer statistics would tell us that's very unlikely. But that said, also, it's important to point out that there are very many men in this country, born and bred in this country, who are brutal and violent towards women. That needs to be said as well. But I do wonder now if in our asylum policy, we're going to talk more about the government's approach to Syrian asylum seekers a little later, but in our asylum policy, do we need to be a lot more realistic about the conditions, the nature of the male life in those countries because of what it inevitably means and certainly means at the moment for the female lives of that country? Sudan, for example, where this individual is from, has seen a massive increase in violence against women and girls. And when I say violence, this is why I gave a bit of a health warning at the beginning. We're talking abduction, rape, murder, giving birth in the street because there's nowhere else to do it. A brutality and a horror, really, that most of us can only imagine and probably don't want to imagine. So what do we do? What do we do when we know that there are countries like Sudan where this is happening, where the degradation of women and the pre-existing sort of position of women in society and protections for women isn't necessarily the same as they are here? What do we do? Do we need to be much more clear-eyed about whether we want such men in this country, or men, even if they're innocent men, trying to flee that situation? Can we take the risk, is the question. I'm trying to ask it sensibly, but it was the first thing that came to mind when I started reading the details some months ago of this murder. Luke Shannon can tell us more about what's gone on in court. Luke, some tough detail in this, isn't there? Luke Shanahan, can you hear us?
Sorry, Sheila. Sorry, I just lost you for a moment there. What did you say?
Would you like to tell us what happened in court today?
Yes. Well, I'll go back to the start, Sheila, if that's all right. 27-year-old Rhiannon Sky White was just trying to get home after a late shift. She worked at a migrant hotel in Walsall. And on the 20th of October 2024, she was on the phone to a friend as she made the four-minute walk from the Park Inn Hotel to Bescot Stadium Station. But she didn't catch her train, and that call was cut off after her friend heard Rhiannon scream. Deng Chol Magic, who is living at the hotel, had followed Rhiannon and attacked her at the station. He stabbed her 23 times with a screwdriver and left her for dead on the platform, to be found by staff on what should have been Rhiannon's train home. And she died in hospital 3 days later. Majek's originally from Sudan. He left there saying his life was under threat. And then he arrived here on a small boat from Germany. And the CCTV footage from that night shows him following Rhiannon from the hotel to the station, then walking away.